ਸਿਰ ਦੇ ਨਾਮ ਸਾਧੂਨਾ ਦੇ ਪਾਵਤਨ ਐਸ ਯੂਸ਼ੁਅਲ ਵੀ ਆਰ ਗੈਦਰਡ ਹੇਅਰ ਟੂਡੇ ਟੂ ਲਿਸਨ ਟੂ ਅਨਦਰ ਡਿਸਪੈਂਸੇਸ਼ਨ ਆਫ ਦ ਲਾਰਡ ਬੁੱਧਿਸ ਧੰਮ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਆਰ ਲਾਈਫ ਬਲੱਡ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਦੀ ਪਾਥ ਟੂ ਆਰ ਲਿਬਰੇਸ਼ਨ ਦ ਪਾਥ ਟੂ ਆਰ ਸੈਲਵੇਸ਼ਨ As sentient beings, we've been lost in samsara for many a eon. And then finally, thanks to this one excellent personality, the Supreme Buddha, today we have the path to liberate ourselves from samsara. So today again, our objective, our goal, our purpose of coming here today is to listen to his teaching, absorb as best as we can this profound doctrine that he shared with us, such that we may be able to understand it, comprehend it, unbind ourselves from this entanglement, this web of samsara, and redeem ourselves once and for all. So prior to us commencing the sermon today, let us all take a moment to observe the five precepts. And prior to observing the five precepts, I ask you all to be upstanding and recite the Namaskara Pata three times and all together.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Saraṇāgamanaṃ sampunnaṃ Pānāti pātā veramani Sikkhāpadaṃ samādhyāmi Adinnādāna veramani Sikkhāpadaṃ samādhyāmi Kāmesu micchācārā veramani Sikkhāpadaṃ samādhyāmi Musāvādā veramani Sikkhāpadaṃ samādhyāmi Surāmerayam ajhapamā dhatthānā veramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhyāmi. Tisaranena saddhiṃ pañca sīlaṃ dhammaṃ sādhukaṃ surakkitaṃ khatvā appamādena sampādeta.
Okay, you may now all be seated. Once again, let us take a moment to reflect on the fact that it is because of the supremely enlightened one, the perfect one, the peerless one, the uncomparable one, the infinitely compassionate Gautama Samma Sambuddha, that we have this Dhamma today. It is because he sacrificed himself over the many countless births in samsara for the liberation of all sentient beings. So, prior to us commencing, let us pay homage to the Lord Buddha in recognition of the fact that it is because of him that we have this Dhamma today. It is because of him we are today able to seek and enlighten ourselves by achieving the ultimate bliss, that is Nibbana.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Most venerable members of the Mahasangha, the chief incumbent monk of the Sri Arunamathani Arama temple, as well as all the other incumbent monks and members of the audience, as well as those who are listening to this sermon being streamed live from all around the world. Prior to us commencing, let us all take a moment to invite all the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead, as well as those who might have been our mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, nephews, cousins and so on and so forth, in our infinitely long journey in samsara, anyone who might have helped us, supported us, offered us some kind of assistance in any way, shape or form. Let us, today that we have received this Dhamma, let us now take this opportunity to pay back for all the good that they have done to us and done for us. Let us invite them all to join us. If any of them have today been born in the woeful plains, let them witness this meritorious deed and acquire the merits that may help them to be born in the blissful plane. And for those that have been born in the blissful plane, may they be able to witness this merit. May they be able to listen to the Dhamma, to comprehend the Dhamma, and be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So as I now make this invitation, I request you all to join me in extending this invitation in your hearts and in your minds out to all those spirits, demons and the dead, as well as all your past relations, wherever they may be. If there's just half a chance, just the slightest chance that they could join us, witness this meritorious deed, listen to this sermon, this is now their opportunity to do so. So let us all make that invitation, ask them to join us prior to us commencing this sermon.
Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata sadhammam munirajasansa sunantu sagga mokkadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badhanta Dhammasavana kalo ayam badhanta. Dhammasavana kalo ayam badhanta.
And also prior to us commencing, let us all take a moment to acknowledge the fact, the reality that although today we have received the gift of Dhamma and our lives have changed beyond recognition, we are very different people to who we were, and that you will know yourselves. However, throughout our journey in samsara, we have not always had the privilege of associating the Dhamma, moral people or noble people. In fact, virtually almost always our associations have been with ignoble people and immoral people, and they defiled our minds with raga, dvesha, moha. Having been blinded with avidya and tanha, that is ignorance and attachment, we may have slandered, abused and desecrated the Aryas, the Samma Sambuddhas, the Pacheka Buddhas, the Arahatta Buddhas, Anagami, Sakrudagami, Sotapannas, be they on the path or having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddha Shasane. For any misdeed we might have done, any words of abuse and slander that we might have directed towards them, either knowingly or unknowingly, such words, such deeds may today block and hinder our progress in the Dhamma. So, prior to us all commencing, today that we have understood the greatness of their character, the greatness of their qualities, let us all take a moment to seek their forgiveness for any misdeeds, for any words of abuse, slander that we might have directed towards them. And finally, prior to us all commencing, let us all take a moment to make a firm resolve within our hearts and in our minds that may the course of this sermon, may I be able to close the gates to the four hells once and forever. Through the course of this sermon, may I be able to attain the achievement of Sotapanna and be able to unlock the gates to the Noble Eightfold Path to ultimately achieve the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. So with that hope, with that firm resolve, determination in your minds, I ask you all to be prepared to listen to this sermon. Okay. So last week we discussed, we made a start to understanding the Satara Satipatthana, this mindfulness, the foundations of mindfulness as we have come to know over the past years. Now, prior to us delivering that sermon last week, I asked you a question: are you all prepared? Are you ready? Because that's not a question that I can answer on your behalf. Only you will have the answer to that question, and that answer is going to be unique to each and every one of you. I mean, it's always only going to be a yes or a no, or perhaps a maybe. And as I said, if it's a yes, then perfectly fine. If it's a no or a maybe, then there's more we need to do in terms of making sure that we have that foundation in the Dhamma. Because it's that foundation in the Dhamma that creates the foundation for mindfulness. Because you need to know what you need to be mindful of. So, and I appreciate from feedback that I've received from yourselves that last week was a little bit heavy. And that's welcome, it's always welcome feedback. But that's okay, because the Buddha says, Ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo, sattanam visuddhiya. If that is the only part, then sometimes it may be tough, but that's the path that we have to travel. Oh, it's tough, so I can't do it. That's the mentality of a loser, not the mentality of a winner. And you know that yourselves. How many times in the face of life, in the face of challenges, did you stand up? When everyone around you said, no, there's not a chance in hell that you're going to be able to do that. You said, no, I'll prove it. I'll do it and I'll prove it. You just watch. Just watch me do it. Watch me stand up in the face of these challenges. And that's how we went forward. Isn't that right? You'll all have stories that you can relate to. You all have your own personal stories how you stood up when challenges came your way. You see, now this challenge that we are trying to overcome is the greatest challenge of all time. And once we've overcome this challenge, then everything else is just small fry. This is that big challenge. This is the one challenge that we must all overcome. And that's the challenge of overcoming these fetters that keep us bound to samsara. So we need to have a proper base in the Dhamma before we can go and tackle these obstacles, before we can start foundation in mindfulness. Now, I asked you to go back and listen to that sermon a few times. If there were segments of that sermon where perhaps you weren't quite sure of, or perhaps there were bits that you weren't really sure of, bits that you really couldn't understand, and I hope you've had a chance to do that. Because what I want to do is to continue on that and take you a little bit further. But I hope the number of people here isn't representative of the fact that, good Lord, we're not going to be able to understand anything that Swami Nansa is going to say from now on. So we might as well go elsewhere. And you know, I have no intention of having a fan base as such. But, you know, the reason we do these sermons is to help you. And this is why I'm sometimes a little bit cautious, a little bit wary about sharing with you everything that I know, sharing with you all the Dhamma that is sometimes quite profound, sometimes not easy to understand. And I want to help you do that one step at a time. Because there's this... How many of you have heard of Indriya Bhavana? You heard of Indriya Bhavana? A few hands? Great. Okay. You see, that's something that the Buddha prescribed several times in the Tripitaka. If you study the Tripitaka, you'll see that there are several places in which the Buddha prescribes the Indriya Bhavana. This is the contemplation, and like I said, I prefer to use the word contemplation rather than meditation, because meditation has lots of connotations which sometimes can throw people off. When you say meditation, people immediately think, oh, I have to be a Buddhist to do that. By religion, they think, you know, it's only secluded to Buddhism. And sometimes, actually nowadays, people use music to meditate. They listen to some music and put on their headsets and then they start meditating. So there are various connotations to meditation now. It's evolved over time, this word meditation, which is why I'm wary of using that word. So I prefer to use the word contemplation, because what we do in meditation is really contemplate. We, having understood the basic doctrine, from that point forward it's a case of applying. It's the application. Bhavita bahulikata. Bhavita. Bhavita is using. So contemplation is nothing other than using what you know in dealing everyday problems. Isn't that what you do at your workplace? You know, you went through the school system, you went through university, you went through some training programs and you learned some skills. Once you've learned those skills, be that soft skills or hard skills, what you do then is in your workplace you apply those skills to deal with people, to overcome day-to-day problems and to overcome challenges. Well, that's exactly what you need to do in the Dhamma as well. If you want to come out at the end of the year having achieved something, having achieved the Margapala, How many of you at the start of the year made your list of goals, and in there one of you, you know, how many of you had, I want to be a Sotapanna by the end of this year? Very good, sir. Very good. It's time that these goals need to start appearing in your list of goals. Remember, I had a very long list of goals. I shared my stories with you in the past many times. How I had my goals broken down into 8 different categories. My investments and my family goals, my health goals, my holidays, my holiday goals, education goals. Into 8 different categories I broke down my yearly goals, and that's how I started my year. And I do the same now as well. It's just that I don't have so many categories now. And all of these goals that I write down, they're all focused towards one objective. Indeed. And that is Nibbana. So no matter what I do, whether it's a kusala or a pinna, I only have one purpose in mind. There are times when I walk up to young Samanera monks, novice monks at the monastery and go, Swami Mahansa, could you give me your robes so that I can wash them for you? Young monks who might have just ordained a few weeks ago. So I ask for their robes and I go and wash them. And I wash them, and in doing so I make a determination. May I never have to wash robes ever again in samsara. Not that I don't want to, but I make a wish, may I never have to. The reason I have to wash myself, reason I have to feed myself is because I have to. I've got no choice right now, because I've been born. For as long as this birth process keeps going, I'm going to have to do this. So whenever I sit down on this seat, and I'm aware that delivering a sermon acquires merit, I make a determination, may I never have to deliver another sermon. May I never have to. Doesn't mean I'm not going to come around and, you know, what happens if I become an arahat unvahanse tomorrow? Will you not see me again? You will. For as long as even there's just one person sat here who wants to listen to the Dhamma, I'll be here. But right now, I'm acquiring merits by doing this. And I'm hoping that may these merits help me attain Nibbana, just as much as you hope and determine may these merits help you attain Nibbana. So it's something I still have to do, because I haven't filled my tank up fully yet. I'm still pumping merit. So, you know, this is practical stuff, right? The Buddhism is nothing but practical, and I've said that to you many times before. Especially to the young listeners among you who have the opportunity to come and sit down here face to face. You know, if you come early, maybe perhaps a few minutes, maybe half an hour before, why don't you find a broom and sweep the temple premises? There's an idea. There's the Velimalua, the outside. You could sweep that. There's the Bodhya. You could go and put some water. You can clean the altar, on which perhaps the people have left some old flowers. Or if there's the public toilet, you can go and clean that in the temple while you wait for the sermon to begin. And when you do that, you make a firm resolve, you know, today I'm here to listen to this sermon. I want to attain Nibbana. May these merits help me do that. Pubbe kata punyata. What a great foundation that will be. In the time that you have, you're doing these deeds and hoping, may I be able to understand this Dhamma. So the moment you sit down on this seat, prepare to listen to this sermon, all the other factors that are required for you to attain Nibbana have now been lined up. Because what we can do is create the Samanantara. The Anantara have already been produced. So we create the Samanantara so that we can achieve this objective that we have, that is Nibbana. You can't attain Nibbana just because you like to attain Nibbana. Because if that were the case, you'll all have become arahants by now, wouldn't you? Don't you all want and like to attain Nibbana? But liking and desire is only a very small point. It's just one factor. Chanda chitta virya vimansa. Chanda is just one factor. What about all the rest of it? Where's the virya? the effort? Where's the chitta? How you conduct your mind, your thoughts? And are all your thoughts dedicated and directed towards achieving this goal? Where is the vimansa? Where is your inquisitiveness of the Dhamma? So you need to create this foundation. Yes, we spoke of foundation of mindfulness, but what about the foundations we need to attain Nibbana? And merit is the foundation to Nibbana as well. Ma bhikkave punyanam bahitta sukasetam adivachanam bhikkave punyanti. Monks, do not fear merit. Do as much merit as you can. Any time you get the opportunity, young children, when you're at home, help your parents out. Perhaps in the past you helped your parents out because they promised you a video game. But now, you can do the same, but wish for something else. Because you're going to have to, you know, if you're progressing in the Dhamma, then you're gonna start understanding and experiencing that me waiting for a video game to turn up, I mean, that's a really negative feeling. That feeling of anxiety, that feeling of frustration, I don't want that. What if there could be the world's best game right in front of me and I didn't feel like I wanted to play with it? I didn't feel like it. I could play if I wanted to, but I don't feel like I want to. What if there was the best food in the world laid out in front of you, your favorite food put on a plate in front of you, and it didn't make you feel uneasy? You could eat it if you wanted to, but you're not particularly fussed. It's not luring you, it's not attracting you. So when you help your parents out at home, make a wish, make a determination, because wishes don't get us anything. But at least if you have a determination, then you can direct those merits towards that purpose, that goal that you have. When you sweep the house with a broom, you know, make that a meditation. Remember last week I asked you, do you have to take a particular posture before you can do Anapanasati? And we went through the Satra Satipatthana Sutra, and there we tried to give meaning to these words. And while I didn't discard the conventional meanings, I gave you something else to think about. And I said, you know, ujunkayam panidaya parimukam satin upattapetva. This is to be forthright in your actions and to have that one objective in mind, and that is Nibbana. So as you sweep the house with the broom, why can't that become a meditation? I can see dirt on the floor. I'm going to get the broom and I'm going to start sweeping the house. My objective is to clean the floor. When there's dust, when there's dirt on the floor, it's not pretty. It doesn't look nice. Like what? Like the state of my mind right now. There's desire, there's aversion, and there's delusion. So what I need to do is use this broom to sweep the house, and likewise, I'm going to use the Dhamma to cleanse my mind. So the Dhamma, or imagine if you had at home, when you want to clean the floor, if you go and put the broom to a side just by the dirt, is the broom going to sweep the house on its own? Is it? There's some dirt on the floor, there's a pillar, and you go and rest the broom on the pillar. Is the broom going to sweep the house on its own? No. You want to clean the house, you have no broom. Can you clean the house? No. So if there's dirt on the floor, and you know, you need the broom to clean the house, but the broom on its own is not going to clean the house, and you without the broom cannot clean the house either. Or sweep the floor, to keep to that example. So you need two things. You are required to be there, you have to make effort, and you also need the broom. Like what? Dharmayai? Obai. You need the Dhamma and you need yourself. This is the effort that you need to put in by using the broom. Like you clean the house, you clean the floor, you sweep the floor. So that can be your meditation. You know, as you clean the floor, as you're sweeping the floor, why don't you think to yourselves, what kind of desires do I have in my mind? You know, some bits of flow, it's really difficult to remove the dirt. Some dirt is you know, there. It's stuck to the flow and you need extra effort. That's what they call elbow grease. So you need a bit of elbow grease to get that dirt and grime off. So you need to put in extra effort to get it off. This is like what we said last week. Anchanto ancha digangwa anchanto digang anchamiti pajanati. Like the wood carver who uses his jack plane, the yatukate, and how where he needs to take long strides, he takes a long stride. Where he needs to take a short one, he takes a short one. Like that, you know, you could... See, if you were to write the Satara Satipatthana Sutra today, what example would you put in that? You wouldn't need the example of the wood carver. You could put yourself in there. Why don't you rewrite the Satara Satipatthana Sutra? Put your name in there. So where the Buddha says Dakko Bambakarova, Dakko is Daksha, someone who's talented, a skilled. Bambakaro is a wood carver. So put your name in there. Let's say your name, what's your name, Putta? Chanura. Yes? Dakko Chanura. So this is skilled Chanura. Does what? He takes a broom and he sweeps the floor. Where he needs to take long strides, he takes a long stride. Where a short stride is required, he just takes a short stride. Where he needs to apply extra effort, he applies extra effort. Where a little bit of effort, a medium effort is required, then medium effort will do the job just fine. But you need a broom in your hand to do that. And there have to be bristles at the end of the broomstick to be able to do that. The broomstick on its own, you can't sweep the floor, can you? You need the bristles attached to the bottom of it. So effort is required. The Dhamma is required. And the bristles on the end of the broomstick is anicca dukkha anatta. So you need anicca dukkha anatta, the understanding of anicca dukkha anatta, to be able to do this. Because how else are you going to remove these defilements that are in your mind? What if you are a painter? You could do the same. If there are bits of, you know, sometimes some of you may be handy at home and get yourself a bucket of paint, a brush, and start painting. Now, could you not do Satara Satipatthana meditation while you're painting? Is it just a wood carver that can be used as an example there? What about when you're painting? You've got your paintbrush. You see these patches on the wall. Some of them may be moldy patches that you want to get rid of. And some of them are very faint, but others, they are very prominent. So you need a few layers of paint on it before it disappears. Others, just one layer, just a job. That's fine. So then you could put yourself into that discourse, into the sutra. See, the woodcarver does not sit down and remind himself how he does the wood carving. What he does is actually he takes the tools that he needs and he then goes to work. So you have to go to work. Recently, one of our anagarikas, he came and spoke to me and said, "Swami Nvansa, I find that sometimes I have lots of things I need to do at the monastery. Helping out the monks and sometimes, you know, attending to my own work and washing up and things like that, and sometimes going on sermons, coming along with monks, and you know, there's lots of stuff I have to get through in a day, and sometimes we have the Buddha Puja, I go and sit down there. I don't really find the time to do just what I want to do. To be able to sit down and just contemplate on the things that I want to contemplate. What do I do? Where do I find the time?" He said, "I need a few extra hours." I said, "We don't have extra hours. You have 24 and I have just the same. The Buddha had the same. Each and every one of us, we've all got the same amount of time in our hands. So I suggested, why don't you..." And what he suggested was, "Perhaps I'll just continue doing this, and then one day when I become a monk, then I'll have the time to go and sit down and meditate and do what it is that I need to do." I said, So you think. Remember I said last week, if you thought the life of a layperson was busy, the life of a monk is much busier. It's much busier. The life of a monk is a lot busier. Particularly where we come to contact with the lay world, with you know, the general public. There are lots of duties and responsibilities that come our way as well. So we have to be careful sometimes not to take on too much. But whether you take on extra duties or responsibilities or not, even if you're a monk just having secluded yourself in a forest, if you're not a busy monk, then there's something wrong. Because right now, whilst you might be busy using your body, your words and your arms and your legs, as a monk, my mind is always very busy. And so it should be. Because my mind is always at war. My mind is always at work. So for the mind to be at work, I don't have to be sat down anywhere, because the mind doesn't need to sit down somewhere to start thinking. It can think. I mean, that's a great... It's fantastic. This mind is fantastic. It doesn't need to be rested anywhere. It can just continue thinking. Whatever you want to think about, the mind can think of. Can it not? If I ask you to... I give you a 2-minute break, start thinking, I'm sure there will be plenty of stuff, plenty of things that you can think about. You don't need a break to think about stuff. You just think all the time. So the mind is really talented in that way. It's a great tool that we all have. It can think all the time, doing whatever. Don't you sometimes sing in the shower? Don't you sometimes sing when you're on the toilet? How are you able to do that? Well, because your mind can do that no matter what your body is doing. Your mind can sing while your body is attending to its needs. Don't you sometimes sing while you're ironing? Or sometimes have other conversations with your family members while you're cooking, cleaning the house? Right? So your mind can do lots of stuff while your body is engaged in other things. Likewise, you can do your meditation, contemplation even, doing whatever. It really doesn't matter. For as long as you're abstaining from the unmeritorious deeds, because that has to be your foundation, where there are unmeritorious deeds, the mind becomes disturbed. And when the mind is disturbed, then you can't, that does not become a good foundation to build this house of Nibbana. You know, like when a bricklayer first lays the foundation, waits for the foundation to dry, and then on top of the foundation he starts laying the bricks. Likewise, we need to have a good foundation on which we can start laying these bricks. So that foundation has to be one based on merit. Abstain from all demerit and do as much merit as you possibly can. So look for opportunities to do merits, always, wherever you are. When you're walking along the road, you know, perhaps you see a nail that's on the road. There's a chance that someone might hurt themselves. Why could you not pick it up and put it to a side? How much merit do you think that's going to acquire? You know, when you do some merit like that, which is unprompted, these are merits that are so powerful that can give you birth in the Paranimitta Vasavartiya. Because you have not been prompted to do it. You're doing it out of your own volition. Very powerful merits. Very powerful. So what if when you pick that nail up, then you think of the Dhamma as well? Now that you have the Dhamma, you can apply the Dhamma into that. You know, these nails, it could prick somebody. Like Raga Dvesha Moha. Like Raga Dvesha Moha that is always keeping us on fire. The flames of Raga Dvesha Moha. I want to put that away. I want to extinguish this fire. So as I'm about to pick this nail up and put it to a side, and that's going to help someone else who comes after me to walk this path without injuring themselves, may I be able to receive the gift of Dhamma from a Kalyana Mitra, such that I am able to remove these defilements of Raga, Dvesha, Moha from my mind, so that I can travel this path to Nibbana, unhampered, uninjured. So you see, there's, you know, if it's something that is not to do with a demeritorious deed, no matter what example you give me, no matter what incident or what event you give me in your life, I can guarantee there'll be something that you can, some dhamma that you can apply into it and use it as a meditation object. No matter what it is, whether it's buttoning up a shirt, taking your shirt off, whether it's walking to your school, whether it's opening up your books, writing down something, drinking some water, no matter what it is, there's always dhamma that you can apply. So it's up to each and every one of you to now start thinking, you know, these things I do in my day-to-day lives, how can I apply the dhamma? That is vimansa. Like I said, chanda chitta virya vimansa, satariddhipada. So you need the satariddhipada to be able to fulfill your patra nibbana. Just chanda is not enough. Vimansa is vimarshane, to constantly keep analyzing, applying, and that you need the mind to do that. So once you've understood the Dhamma, then from that point forward, no matter what you do in your day-to-day lives, apply the Dhamma. But you can't apply the Dhamma when you're doing an unmeritorious deed, because your mind is too unsettled at that time. The defilements, as well as the five hindrances, Kama Chanda, Vyapada, Tinamidda, Uddacca Kukkucca Vichikiccha, these five hindrances have now veiled your mind. And at that time there is no place for the Dhamma. At that time you have been defeated. So you need to try and remove yourself from such situations as soon as possible, as fast as possible. Recently one of our young novice monks came and spoke with me, and he said, Swami Nuhansa, I think when he was ordained, he was in grade 8, so he's about 14 now. He says, Swami Nuhansa, when I was a layman, I had a girlfriend, and I liked my music a lot. So whenever I'm with others, I have no problem, but when I'm alone, then these thoughts of my girlfriend keep coming back into my head. See, practical problems. Just because we have donned robes doesn't mean we have become arahats. These defilements are still in our minds. So, remember, the only difference between you and I, ladies and gentlemen, is that I'm doing this 24/7. You're taking your time with it. Time I don't have, time I can't trust myself to be alive during which. So anyway, this young novice monk says, Swami Nuhansa, you know, thoughts of my girlfriend keep coming back to me. How we used to go out together, how we used to be together, how we used to eat together, how I used to go and see her in secret. And also the music, I loved my music, and these songs that I used to sing, they keep coming back into my head. What can I do at that time? What should I do at that time? So I said, if these thoughts come to you when you keep yourself away, when you seclude yourself from the company of others, then try and keep yourself in the company of others. Because all the, you know, when I say others, we are talking about all the other monks at the monastery. They're all satpurusha, eager to provide satpurusha sevani, the association of moral and noble people. So when you're in their company, what we talk of is the Dhamma. So when the Dhamma prevails, asad dharma, there's no room for asad dharma to rise. Mara is not powerful at that time when the Dhamma prevails. So keep yourself in the company of others as much as you possibly can. Remember, I gave you the story last week about that monk who tried to seclude himself from the company of other monks, and then that story went to the Buddha, and then the Buddha summoned this monk and asked him, what is it you're up to? And he said, Swami Nuhansa, Bhagyatun Nuhansa, you tell us to seclude ourselves. And what did the Buddha say at the time? I don't mean seclude yourself physically from the company of other monks. You have to be in the company of the other monks, otherwise how would you be able to find out your faults? Is it easier to find our faults or is it easier to find other people's faults? Other people's faults, absolutely. It's a lot easier to find other people's faults. It's very difficult to find your own faults. That being the case, should we not be with others as much as we possibly can who are able to find our faults and who are able to point them out when they see them with the right intentions? Isn't that what we should be doing as much as we possibly can? So be in the company of other monks such that they will be able to spot your faults and then they'll be able to provide you with advice and guidance and instructions on how to fix them. So likewise, I explained to this monk, you know, don't try to seclude yourself. Try and always be in the company of the other monks as much as possible. And then he said, okay, that's fine, but then there are still times when I have to seclude myself. When there are times when everyone else is busy and I have to find something to do on my own, then what do I do? Then I said, remember that you're at battle. And I said, you know, if you keep in mind these three things, keep in mind these three things that I'm going to share with you, and that'll help you win this battle. Aren't we always at battle with raga, dvesha, moha? Yes. So these three things. Number one, associate the Dhamma as much as you possibly can. Remember, the reason you come here is not to associate me. The reason you come here is to associate the Dhamma. If I sat here and started giving you nonsense, would you be here the next day? If I sat down here and started cracking jokes and saying nothing else, or just shouting at other people and finding faults with other people, would you be here the next day? No. I urge you not to be here the next day. Write it down if you ever forget. And then when I ask you, why don't you come along to sermons anymore? Swami Nuhansa, that day you said, if ever you start to speak nonsense and rubbish when you are sat on that seat and you start pointing your fingers at other people and say, look at them, look at what they're saying, look at what they're doing, and finding faults with other people, you said, don't come along to these sermons anymore. So the reason you're here and the reason you continue to come here is to associate the Dhamma. Okay? So number one is associate the Dhamma as much as you possibly can. This is why I urge you and I encourage you to listen to these sermons repeatedly. Whenever you have some spare time, listen to these sermons, be the English ones, Sinhala ones, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't have to be Dharma Abhay sermons, it can be any sermon. As long as these sermons help you to eradicate Raga, Dvesha, Moha, that's all. That's all we need to be thinking about. That's all we need to be concerned of, right? So number one, associate the Dhamma. Number two, be mindful. Be mindful. Because remember, we are at battle. And if we have this battle court, now you have your soldiers stood protecting your king. Imagine your soldiers stood in a square, in the shape of a square, and now they are protecting the king who's in the center. These soldiers have to be mindful. Sometimes enemies come in disguise. They're the most dangerous ones. Sometimes, you know, enemies come and they, you know, you can tell that enemy from miles away. Oh, there's one. And then you can shoot them from afar. They're not that dangerous. The dangerous ones are the ones that come in disguise. Because when they're in disguise, they can come up very close to you. Sometimes they've got a whole load of weaponry with them, but they're in disguise. And because they're in disguise, you can't spot them from afar. Then you have to wait until they approach you. So you have to be very careful. Now, you know, relate that to your own life experiences. Sometimes, you know, when you feel raga, desire, you can spot it from very far away. Sometimes it comes in disguise. I'll give you an example, a really simple example you can relate to. Let's take an example, a simple example of a guy and a girl. One day a guy meets a girl and she comes from a relatively poor family. And this guy sees this girl, he's very sad. Now, this is a guy who's trying to study the Dhamma. He wants to attain, well, he thinks he wants to attain Nibbana, something called Nibbana. He's trying to progress on that path. He's doing merit, right? He's not a bad guy, he's a good guy. So he sees this girl one day, and this girl is in tears. So he approaches this girl and asks her, "Hey, what's the problem? Are you alright?" And then she says, "Well, you know, I don't come from a well-to-do family. My parents are really poor, and I don't have a lot of money." And then she goes on to start explaining all the problems that she has. Now, he starts to feel sympathy. He starts to sympathize with this girl. And he thinks, well, you know, the Buddha says, show metta, show karuna, show compassion towards people. So I have to be compassionate to this person. Let me be compassionate with this person. And then he says, well, don't cry. You know, let me sit down, let's discuss your problems and I'll help you tackle your problems. And he starts giving advice to this girl. You know, such is life. You know, don't worry. You know, I've had problems like that. You know, I've had breakups in my life, right? People who came close to me and then they went away. And, you know, there have been times when I've been really sad. And it's always good to have someone to share your sorrows with, isn't it? And then she says, oh, you're such a nice person. How kind of you to come and sit down and talk with me. And then you say, well, you know what, I've got to go now, but I'll come back next week and perhaps, you know, you'll be feeling a little bit better. So now this guy, you know, what he wanted to do was show compassion. See, these are enemies who come in disguise. So he wanted to show compassion. Nothing other than loving kindness and compassion. This is the problem. If you understand it wrongly, see, if you understand metta and karuna wrongly, and if you don't see the relationship to Dhamma, you're going to go completely off track. Because if metta is going to be all about being nice to other people, oh, you poor being, let me help you, here's some water, this, that. I mean, there is that as well. That's the laukika metta, not the lokottara metta. And if karuna, that compassion is all about, hey, can I help you, come along, you know, I've got a spare room in my home, you can take rest for a few days there. That's laukika karuna, where there's room for defilements. There's room for asrava. So if you don't have the essence of the Dhamma, then metta and karuna, laukika metta and karuna can take you completely the wrong way. Because these are enemies coming in disguise. So the next week the guy goes back and after he's done whatever his chores are, he goes and speaks to the girl. Hey, how are you doing today? And she says, well, you know what? It was so nice of you to come and speak to me that day. You know, I was in tears. I was really broken down. And thanks to you, I was able to overcome that grief. You know, I think we should probably hang around sometime, right? Here's my number. We'll catch up later. That's the end of that story. Or at least that chapter. Fast forward a couple more days, this guy thinks, I wonder how she's doing, let me give her a call. I'm just being nice to her, you know. I'm just being nice to her. Nothing else. No evil intentions, nothing else. I'm just being nice, you know, this is what people have to do, be nice to other people. And, you know, Swami once said, metta karana, karuna karana. So this is what I'm doing. I'm being nice to her. You give her a call, hey, how are you doing? By the way, I didn't get your name that day. Oh, my name is Sandamali. Oh, great. My name is Supun. I'll speak to you later, Sandamali. Next day he calls and says, hi, Sando. Sandamali became Sando. Oh, Sandu. Why? Being nice. I'm just being nice to her. She has no other friends. She said her family is in a really difficult place right now. Would you like me to come around sometime, you know, help out your parents if they're ill, you know, maybe there's something I can do? Yeah, you know, I think that would be a great idea. My parents would love to see you. So he goes around to her place And they sit down. They sit down for a cup of tea, and then you know, introduce to the parents. All what for? Being. This is all being nice. Nothing else. This is all being nice. Why showing what? Compassion and loving kindness. Loving kindness. Loving in bold. At least that's where this is heading. Forgetting the kindness. Now this is turning into love. And then, you know, the next day the girl rings up and says, you know, Dad thinks you're a really nice guy, by the way, Supun. Yeah, I thought the same. You know, why don't we go to the cinema in a week's time or so? Now, where's this story heading? What did this guy want to do? He wanted to show compassion and loving kindness, metta and karuna. Previously, he wanted to practice the Dhamma, and his intentions were to become a monk. Perhaps in the course of a few months. But what happened? Completely went off track. Why? Because of enemies who come in disguise. So you have to be mindful. You know, when you become good people, because, and I'm sure that you are, right? Who you were and who you are now are sometimes worlds apart. And I'm sure you'll be able to confirm that. You are the best testament of the Dhamma, really, nothing else. You will know how you used to be. Fast forward, or rather rewind a couple of years' time, you know, 3-4 years back, the person that you were and who you are now. I'm sure you'll be able to say, my God, you know, Swami Nuhansa, we are worlds apart, who I was then and who I am now. Thanks to the Dhamma, nothing else, thanks to the Dhamma. So you're good people. What happens with good people, ladies and gentlemen? This is practical advice. You're going to attract other people towards you. This is going to happen. Both men and particularly women. Be careful. Being a good person, you're going to attract other people. You're going to become the center of attraction. Other people will want to come and associate with you, because back in those days, you spoke harsh words, but now your words are very soft. You're very kind to people. You're very nice to people. You speak in a very soft tone because, you know, you think, I need to practice the Dhamma. The Dhamma has made me a very calm and collected person. These are attributes that people like to see in society. So they're going to be attracted towards you, both men and women. Especially the young among you. You know, this is practical advice I want to share with you. Well, guess what? This can happen to not just lay people. What about monks? How many stories have you heard of where monks who ordained came into the Shasane to fulfill the path to Nibbana, and then what happened? The pretty young girl came to the monastery or to the temple one day, and then because he wanted to be nice, he went and sat down and started to deliver a sermon. And then she started brushing her hair to one side, then the other side. A few smiles, a few furtive glances, and the next day, this monk forgets why he ordained in the first place. Shouldn't we be careful? Is it just you who has to be careful? No. For as long as raga, dvesha, moha are walking on 2 feet, who's that? Me? I'm just raga, dvesha, moha walking on 2 feet. Persons, this is who a person is. Just a bundle of raga, dvesha, moha walking on 2 feet. We have to be careful of enemies who come in disguise. Because otherwise what happens is we forget our purpose. And loving kindness and compassion turns to other aims and other objectives. And before you know it, you're off track and you're lost. Sometimes you end up worse persons than you started. So be mindful. That's number two. Number three. Never give up. Never give up. This is where effort comes in. Because when you're fighting that battle, ladies and gentlemen, you are bound to come across enemies. Some of them will have quite heavy weaponry. Some of them will be quite fatal. Some serious weaponry they'll have on them. The easy thing to do is, well, today it's okay, tomorrow I'm going to be a better person. You're one day too late. You know, sometimes, I mean, again, I'll take back, you know, to think about really practical day-to-day examples. You know, for example, when you have a report to do at work, or perhaps some homework that has to get done, and you have a week to complete it, what is the natural inclination? Procrastination. Today, I'm just going to let today go by. I'll start tomorrow. I'm sure I'll be able to do this on time. You're one day too late. And then the next day comes along. Well, I've still got 3 days left in the week. I've only taken up 2 days. You know, I've got so many things to do. You know, there's lots of people who need my attention, who need my time. And by the way, Swami Nuhansa said what? Be nice to other people. He said, be good, be kind to other people, loving kindness. I have to be compassionate. So I need to go and help other people out. So I'm going to go and do that. And you switch on the TV or there's news on television. You know, I need to keep myself abreast with what's going on in the world. So news is from 7 to 8. 8 o'clock news finishes. Excuse me. It's time to switch off the television. But, oh, just another 15 minutes isn't going to do any harm, is it really? Now you're sat down for another 15 minutes. Another program starts. Now you're curious what's going to happen next. Like how they do with teledramas. You know how they always leave you on a cliffhanger before the adverts? Or how they always leave you on a cliffhanger at the end of the episode so that you're always going to tune in the next day? Because this is the nature of the world, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, I think a few weeks ago I spoke to you and I said about, you know, the promise of pleasure. Wherever you go, as you walk on the streets, the promise of pleasure. All these billboards and shops and all these advertisements promising you of pleasure. When in the face of pleasure, when pleasure has been promised, our natural inclination is to bend towards it. Because this is what we've been practicing throughout samsara. In the seek of happiness, we've always leaned towards sources of pleasure. Because we were never able to see the suffering that lies beneath the veil of pleasure. We never did vidarshana. Vidala daluvene. What lies beneath. We were fooled by what lies on the surface. So this is why, whenever you feel the promise of pleasure, whenever you think, this is something that's going to bring me pleasure, that's the time to use the Dhamma. You have to be careful. What's that old saying? I can't remember it off the top of my head right now, but there's an old saying that has this meaning whereby the people that you don't get along with, you know, them you can kind of be mindful, just keep an eye out for them from time to time. But the people who are closest to you, you have to be always mindful. Because you have allowed them to come into your personal space. You have allowed them to, you've trusted them. You've trusted them to come into your personal space and stand up right in front of you, right by you. Likewise, the pain that comes to your life, you have to be generally aware of it. But when pleasure comes to you, that's when you have to be extremely cautious, extremely mindful. Because if you're not able to penetrate through the veil of pleasure, and see the suffering beneath it, see the suffering behind it, then it's only going to be a matter of time before you're going to be defeated. So this is where you need to have right effort. This is where you need to have that effort and to have the determination, I am not going to give up. I'm never going to give up. If you see some ants, you know, if you see a line of ants in your kitchen or at home somewhere, right? And if you don't like that, if you want to get rid of those ants, there are two ways you can do it. What's the easier thing to do? Kill them. Oh, be gone, and they'll be gone, and they'll be gone. That's the easier way to do it. But what's the better way to do it? What's the more efficient way to do it? If there are ants, you'll know that these ants are attracted by something that is sweet. So you go and find the source of the attraction, and then you do what? Remove the sweets. Remove what it is the source of the attraction. Once you've done that, you don't need to deal with the ants again. The ants will be gone in a matter of minutes. So there are two ways then you can deal with problems in life. I'm talking about the pleasures that come your way, right? The suffering that comes your way. Pleasure and suffering. Because they are two sides of the same coin. When you experience suffering, you can either try and get rid of the suffering. For that you can do Kaya Sankara, Vachi Sankara and Mano Sankara. Or you can look at the other side of the coin and you'll spot what? Pleasure. This was the pleasure that attracted you towards whatever it was that ultimately brought you the suffering. Remember the rat that took the classes? We've spoken about that in the past. When the rat wants to avoid the trap, and there are two classes that the rat could choose from, you could pick one or the other. One class teaches what? How to avoid the trap. The other teaches what? How to avoid the bait. Which class does the rat need to go to? The bait. If the rat takes the second class, then that suffering will no longer be a part of its life. But there are various types of traps. Just because you've learned how to avoid one trap doesn't mean you're going to fall into another trap. You know, isn't that the case? You know, when 15 or 50 years back, I don't know if they had traps for rats back then. Let's say 20 years back, there would have been some kind of traps for rats. But now these traps have been, they're very advanced. Advanced traps. In fact, there's a YouTube channel on which they show nothing but how to make innovative rat traps. There's a dedicated YouTube channel for that. Because recently we did Guru Swaminarayan did a sermon called Mihabaka. This is the trap for the rat, and then it got posted on YouTube. And so because, you know, YouTube does this analytics in the background, it thinks now we are now really keen about rat traps. It's now, when you go on YouTube, it brings us the recommendations. Yo, here's another way you can trap a rat. Okay? So there are these really clever ways now that people have come up with to trap rats. So over time, the techniques are going to change. They're going to evolve and they're going to get more complicated, more complex. So if you're going to try to learn how to avoid the suffering, you're going to have to keep doing that forever. But if you learn how to avoid the bait, then that's a one shot. Do it once and you'll never have to fall into the trap, no matter what shape, how tricky that trap is. So what we need to do then is to have the effort. Never give up that determination whenever you see Ashwada in your lives. Whenever you experience Ashwada, whenever you experience pleasure in your lives, please take a moment to look behind the pleasure. Because you have to be able to see the vexation that lies behind it. You have to be able to see the pelima that lies behind it. If you're not able to see the vexation that lies behind the pleasure, what do you do then? What do you do then? One, you don't give up. You continue to investigate. This is like Sherlock Holmes. When was the last time Sherlock Holmes ever gave up? No, he never gave up. Every story, he found out who the criminal was. Right? So, you've got to be the Sherlock Holmes then. Because sometimes, you know, as like I said, these pleasures, they come in disguise. These enemies, they come in disguise. On the front of it, there's just a load of pleasure. Very attractive, very luring. So you've got to be the Sherlock Holmes then and look behind the veil until you spot, aha, I found it. I have been in vexation all along. This is why I feel like this is bringing me pleasure. Now when you see that, you realize that this is not a friend but a foe. Now you start attacking. And then you win the battle. But what if you say, hey, he looks like a decent guy. Let's take him in. And now you brought him into your castle. Who's come in? A foe in disguise. Now this guy can wreak havoc, can't he? Straight to the king. It's going to kill you. It's going to destroy you. Isn't it the pleasure in your lives that have destroyed you so far? In sansara? Wasn't it the pleasure that always brought you suffering? The things that looked painful on the surface, you were never attracted to them. But the things that looked pleasurable on the surface, that promised you a world of pleasure, like what? Pleasure land. Right? The things that promised you pleasure on the surface, those were the things that attracted you. Those were the things that lured you. So you went after it. You allowed it to come into your personal space. Come, let's be friends. Be mine. Be part of me. You're welcome. And then what did it do? As soon as it found the opportunity, backstabbed. Slit your throat. So be very careful. You see, so if you use these three things, ladies and gentlemen, you can be safe. One, associate the Dhamma. The Dhamma has to be your best friend. So if I ask you who's your best friend, at least while you're under this roof, who should that be? The Dhamma. When you leave this building, when you leave the temple, I ask you best friend. You know, if your friend comes and asks you, Machang, who's your best friend? Don't say the Dhamma. They'll probably think you've gone mad. Right? You can give an answer to that. But now at least if someone asks you, who's your best friend? At least you will think about what Swami Mahansa said in the sermon. Who should be my best friend really? And that should be the Dhamma. So make the Dhamma your best friend. Befriend the Dhamma. So if you are unable to spot the Mara that lies behind the Ashwada, if you are unable to spot the pain or the vexation that lies behind the pleasure, you continue to exercise effort. But then there are times where exercising effort itself is not enough. Then where are you lacking? Number one. What? The Dhamma. That's where you're lacking. If after a continuous perusal, if after a continuous digging and digging and digging, you're still not able to see the vexation that lies behind the pleasure, you need more Dhamma. You need to go and study the Dhamma. So go back to the drawing board. Why is it that I sense this as pleasure? You know, I sometimes wish that more people would come and tell me, Swami Mahansa. Because actually what happens most of the time is people come and say, Swami Mahansa, I am frustrated, I am suffering right now, I'm in pain, please could you help me? That's okay, I can help. But I wish more people came and spoke to me and said, Swami Mahansa, I feel attracted to this thing, or that thing or the other. There's a guy that I feel attracted to. How do I fight that battle? Swami Mahansa, there's a particular type of food that I find myself always attracted and I can't break the attraction. I can't break the lure. Now which lesson are you taking? How to avoid the bait? Well, if you're clever enough to say that the rat should go to the first class and not the second, well, what class should you go to then? Because I offer both classes. You can pick which class you want to come to. The second class I'm not really so keen on, but because I have a duty to you, and you know, when you're broken down, when you're sad, when you're feeling frustrated and disappointed. Yes, of course, we can help you there as well. But the reason you have to come along to this class is why? Because you skipped the other class. The reason you have to go to support classes is because you skipped which class? The main class. That's why you need support classes. So I wish more people would really come and speak to me and say, Swami, once I feel attraction, I feel desire. There's a pretty girl in class and I can't break the attraction. I feel like I'm going to fall for her. What should I do? That's where I can help you best. Because now you're treating the problem before it becomes a problem. When you've come into that relationship and now you're starting to suffer, it's too late. Now we are trying to fix after the fact. So all of that is just some practical advice and advice that I shared with that young novice. I said, remember those three things, Swami Vansa. If you do that, and you know, forget everything else. Just keep those three things as your guiding light. One, associate the Dhamma as much as you possibly can. Every moment you get, every time you get, every spare moment you get, associate the Dhamma. Learn the Dhamma, study the Dhamma. Learn the scriptures. Open up the Tripitaka and read some of the scriptures. And you learn the Buddha's advice that he gave. You know, some people, they have trouble falling asleep. You know, when you sit down to listen to a sermon, or sometimes when you sit down to meditate, before you know it, you've dozed off. Guess who else had that problem back in the Buddha's day? The great elder Moggallana, Buddha's chief disciple. He had that problem as well. Did you take a moment to go and read the advice that the Buddha gave? If you think you've got a problem, guess what? The Buddha covered it. He's seen it all before. He's the greatest doctor ever. He's seen it all before. So if you have that trouble, if you have that problem, go and refer to the scriptures. Read some of those texts. If you still can't, if you can't find it, then you can come and ask a Swaminathan. You know, Swaminathan, what advice can you give me? I hear that the Buddha offered some advice to the great elder Moggallana. What should I do? Can you share with me some of that advice? So, study the Dhamma, associate the Dhamma as much as you possibly can. Number two, be mindful always. Whenever you're doing something, be mindful. What am I doing this for? Remember, it's not a case of being mindful that you're moving the parts of your body. It's not what you're doing that matters, it's why you're doing it that matters. The what is not so important. The why is the crucial factor. Because two people doing the same thing, one can earn merit, one can earn demerit, depending on what? Why they're doing it. A really simple story. There's a man lying on the bed. He's bleeding. There's another man stood next to him. He's got a knife in his hand. What thoughts come to mind? Murderer or surgeon? One's earning merit, the other's earning demerit, acquiring demerit. Why? It's not the what, it's the why. Intention. Chetanaham bhikkave kammang vadami. So be mindful of what your intentions are when you conduct yourself in day-to-day life. And that each and every one of you can do. It doesn't matter what age you are. Putha, can you not be mindful of all the things that you do in your day-to-day life? Of course. When you open the door and you step outside, why am I doing this? What am I going after? Why do I need to do this? Before you open your mouth to speak to somebody, why am I sharing this? What am I about to speak? Another Anagarika came and spoke to me the other day, and I offered him some advice recently, because he said, Swami, sometimes when I open my mouth, I say things that I later on regret. You know, when I see sometimes people wasting things, or sometimes when I see that people shouldn't be conducting themselves in certain ways, I go and say things and then later on I regret. And then I ask him, why do you say it in that way? And then he said, it's because I want other people to know that he's wrong. I want other people to be able to spot the person that's done the wrong. I said, that's where the problem is. If through the course of giving your advice, whoever it is that's doing the wrong stops doing the wrong thing, haven't you achieved what you want to achieve? You know, if among you there's a murderer, let's say there's one of you is a murderer, I give you advice generally. One way I could advise, hey guys, right, that guy over there, he's a murderer. Now everyone's looking at him. He's never going to want to change. He's going to feel belittled. All his self-respect is going to be washed away. And he's going to start hating. But what if I could give general advice? And I say, you know what? If you do something like this, murder is a bad thing to do. Taking away someone's life is a really bad thing to do. And these are some of the things that could happen to you. Now that person is willing to change, but we never pointed our finger at that person. But he or she was able to take the advice and change for the better. Shouldn't that be our objective? Are there good and bad people in this world? Okay, first question. Are there bad people in this world? No. Are there good people in this world? Are there good people in this world? No. There are good qualities and bad qualities. There are people in whom all the qualities that they possess are good. Who are they? Arahants. The Buddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, and the Arahata Buddhas. There are other people, there are only two types of people from that context. There are some people in whom all the qualities that they possess are good. And then there are others who have a mixture of good and bad. But there is no one in this world who only has what? Bad qualities. There is no one person like that. Has never been born, will never be born. Didn't the Devadatta have good qualities? Didn't he? Did he not respect his parents? At least it's, himself. I'm not talking about what he, got someone else to do. Ajasattva. But what about him? Everyone has good and bad qualities. It's a mixture of good and bad. There is not one person who is entirely bad, because there are no good and bad people. There's just qualities. So when you look at people and you try to judge people, it's really a lame thing to do. Because to be able to judge somebody, you should be able to make a list of all the good and bad qualities that that person possesses. And can you do that? And aren't we so quick to judge people sometimes? They speak of first impressions. Isn't that a judgment? And how long do they say to make a first impression of somebody? Is it 10 seconds or something like that? It's something like that, isn't it? 10 seconds or something like that? There have been studies that have been done about this. First impressions. And first impressions last long. Because what happens in that first 10 seconds you associate someone, you in your mind, you try to spot those qualities that you can relate to. What about all the qualities that you can't relate to? What about the qualities that you don't know about? You don't know of? Because you can only measure somebody else with your own yardstick. If you have a yardstick, which is how long? A yard. That's why it's called a yardstick. That's the furthest you can measure. A yard. That's the longest distance you can measure. If you want to measure something that's longer than that, then you need a different tool. At once. If not, you're going to have to take time, because you're going to have to keep moving the yardstick. And that's going to take time. But what if you only have a yardstick? Or let's take a meter ruler. And you want to measure, you look at a kilometer and you want to try and gauge how long that is with your, you've only got a 1 meter ruler. You can only accurately say it's at least one meter long. Beyond that, you have no sense. You're not able to gauge that. Because you don't have the qualities that that person possesses for you to be able to gauge that person. So when you say someone's good, who are you comparing that person to? Yourself. When you say someone's bad, who are you comparing that person to? Yourself. If you're in a clique of drunkards, isn't each of them going to say, "Hey, he's a really good guy. He's a really good guy. You know, he never grasses us out. Really good guy. You know, we should associate with him." But standing outside, if you are not a drunkard, and then you look at that, you know, that clique, and you go, "No, don't associate with them," because you say, you know, they're bad people. But that's wrong. What about all the good qualities that they possess that you don't? So you have to really be able to appreciate other people. Not just other people, all other beings. Can you appreciate a dog? Can you appreciate a dog? Absolutely. You know, take a dog and you know, say you have a pet at home. And this dog, it always litters in your living room. Now, one man could go, this animal is a real pain. And he starts hitting the animal. And every time he sees the animal, all he can think of is, all he has is thoughts of anger and aversion and hatred towards his animal. And he hits the animal all the time, shouts at the animal. But what about the fact that whenever he comes home, the animal comes running because his master has come home. And it's so happy to see the master, to meet and greet the master. Could you not appreciate that quality of the animal? Have you heard of this animal called the dung beetle? It's a small insect. It's called the dung beetle. Why is it called the dung beetle? Sorry? It rolls dung, yes. It goes looking for what? Dung. What's dung? Cow dung. It's called the dung beetle because it goes looking for dung. It rolls dung all the time. So no matter where you put a dung beetle down, whether it's in your garden or somewhere on the floor, it's always going to go looking for what? Dung. That's the nature of that animal. Well, guess what he did when he was a human being? What kind of sankara do you think that animal did when he was a human? What did he go looking for? Dung. Never appreciated anybody. Always sought weaknesses in other people so he could criticize. So that's what the dung beetle does. It keeps rolling the dung. And he keeps collecting bits of dung and then amalgamating that to the little ball that it has, so it can makes it bigger and bigger. You'll have seen it perhaps on television, and you can just punch it onto Google or YouTube when you get back home. Dung beetle. And study that animal and the nature of that animal, what it does. So it plays with this dung. I mean, it doesn't think that it's playing with it, but this is all the animal can do. It just rolls dung all day long. Because that's what he's used to. When he was a human being, when that animal was a human being, all it went looking for was the dung in other people, not the diamonds. He went looking for dung in other people, not the diamonds. Not the gems. So what kind of person are you then? Given the opportunity, do you spot people's faults and weaknesses immediately, or are you keen to spot people's strengths and their positive attributes their good qualities, their great qualities. Remember last week I said an arahatun vahanse is nothing other than the amalgamation of a bunch of qualities. All what qualities? Good qualities. And remember I also said the reason I am not an arahant today? What's the reason I am not an arahant yet? Because I don't possess all the great qualities that who doesn't possess? Who possesses? You. Sir, when I possess all the great qualities that you do, I will be an arahant. When I possess all the great qualities that you do, madam, I will be an arahant. When I possess all the great qualities that you all possess today, I will be an arahant. What if I possess all the dung qualities that you have today? What will I be? A dung beetle. If I just go looking for dung, I'm going to find dung. You can find what you seek. Because until you find it, you're going to keep looking for it. But if you're looking for gems, then absolutely you will find gems in people. So look for the gems in other people so that you can make them part of you. Because if you want to become an arahant, and becoming an arahant is nothing other than collecting, going after other people, associating other people and finding the gems that they hold that you don't, and making that part of your treasure chest, then do so. But for that you have to be able to spot the gems first. You have to be able to spot the diamonds first. If all you do is spot the dung, then you're going to become a dung beetle. Don't become a dung beetle. So when I know, you know, in the past you have come and shared with me stories of sometimes people in your family, sometimes people at work, and how some of them mistreat you. I think recently there was a really long email that came through. Someone forwarded, showed me a printout of that, and there was this one lady who was giving a really long description about some problems they're having at home, and she wanted me to give some advice. I didn't really have the time to go through it, so I'll probably pick that up next week. But no matter who you associate, ladies and gentlemen, you have to be able to spot the gems within them. If you can't spot the gems within them, whose fault is that? Whose fault is that? Indeed. It's our fault. It's my fault. Always spot the gems within other people. And so when you become an arahant, what you're doing is really spotting these great qualities in other people and collecting them one by one into your treasure chest. You keep filling this treasure chest up. One day it's going to fill to the brim. And that day, you are an arahant. That's what we need to do. Not just in people, but animals. Anyone really. Anyone you come across, try and find the gems within them. So that was just another bit of practical advice. And coming back to the main point that I wanted to talk to you about today. So I said, like last, I wanted to continue on what we started last week, and this is the foundations of mindfulness. But I'm not really going to talk about the rest of it, because there are 14 types of kaya anupassana. We only spoke about anapanasati. Then there's iriyapata pabbe and so on. How do you focus your meditation on the postures? Contemplation of the postures and so on. But what I want to talk to you about today is that what I asked you at the beginning, which is indriya bhavana. This is contemplation on the faculties. Now, to start with, I'll give you a short story. There was one day a non-Buddhist disciple that went and spoke to the Buddha. He sat down with the Buddha and he asked the Buddha, Venerable Gotama, you teach of Indriya Bhavana in your dispensation, don't you? And he said, yes, we do. I do. And then this Brahman says, well, guess what? We teach the Indriya Bhavana as well. And our Indriya Bhavana is something like this. We advise those who are engaged in this Indriya Bhavana to pretend to be blind, to pretend to be deaf. So while you still have eyes, pretend to be deaf. Pretend that you can't see. So walk around like blind people with your eyes closed. Pretend you can't hear things. Pretend to be blind. You have a tongue and you can taste, but pretend you can't taste. This is the Indriya Bhavana that we teach in our teaching. And then he asked the Buddha, do you teach something similar? And then the Venerable Ananda was stood next to the Buddha, and the Buddha says, Ananda, look at what this man is talking about. He says, while you've got eyes, pretend you're blind. While you've got ears, pretend you're deaf. And he looks back again at the Brahmin and asks, so Brahmin, what if I were to ask you the question, what if, you know, people who are born blind and deaf, would it not be easier for them to do the Indriya Bhavana than you? So now this Brahmin is lost for words. Because then they'll have cultivated that Bhavana much better than people who have been born with eyes and ears. So really, if you really want to practice that Bhavana, what's the best thing to do as soon as you're born? Blind yourself and make yourself go deaf. If you do that, then it's much easier to do that meditation, that Bhavana. So the Buddha says, that is not the Indriya Bhavana that I teach in my dispensation. And when he said that, Venerable Ananda says, oh Venerable Sir, please would you preach to us the Indriya Bhavana? And he makes an invitation to the Buddha. And then the Buddha says, okay, I shall speak. Listen. The Buddha asks, all of you who seek pleasure in your lives, and to seek pleasure, and this touches on some of the points we spoke about last week, to find this pleasure, there are certain things that we have to use. Think of it as tools that we use to find pleasure. One of this is the eye. The other is the chakku vijnana, the eye consciousness. The other is the rupa. The rupa that is in the outside world. Then there is the chakku sampasya, which is rupa, eye, and the mind all lining up. Think of it as all those three factors lining up to give you the result. Then there is chakku sampasya vedana, the sensation that comes out of the process of looking at that object. Isn't that the process that we use? Aren't these the things that we use to find pleasure in our lives? The Buddha asks. And the Brahmin says, yes, this is what we use to find pleasure in our lives. This is the problem, he says. So isn't that true in our lives? To seek pleasure, we use the eye. We use the outside world, the objects that we see in the outside world, these sights. We use our eye consciousness, the consciousness that we have, you know. So if you die, then there's no consciousness. But there's an eye. There's no point. There's no good. What if you have an eye, you have eye consciousness, but you're put into a dark room? Now there's no light, so you can't see the outside world. What if you have consciousness, there is light, but there's no eye? You still can't see. So all these three things have to be there for chakku sampasya to take rise. So chakku sampasa is something that is subject to what? Udevaya. Udavena, vayavena. Remember, like the fire, you know, the fire is a great example of how things arise and pass away. When you look at a fire and you're pointing at a fire and go, that is the fire, the moment you point at the fire, what's happening? The factors that give rise to that fire are coming together. There's oxygen, there's the temperature, and there's whatever that is flammable. So, you know, whatever flammable object. So all these three things coming together to give fire at that point in time. So the next moment, half a millisecond later, it's the same factors, but not the same things. It's not the same bit of oxygen. It's not the same temperature. It's not the same flammable object that's giving rise to the fire half a millisecond later. So with every moment, the fire is being risen and it passes away. Udavena, vayavena, udavena, vayavena. So this is the process that happens. So likewise, When we create this pleasure land, and I'm borrowing material from last week's sermon, when we create this pleasure land within us, the self-procreation, as we spoke about, right? This me, mama, self, okay? To give rise to this pleasure land, this self, this self-procreation process, we use the I, we use the object in the outside world, and we use the chakku vijnane. When these three things come together, provided the condition of avidya exists, because ignorance is a condition, it's like a switch that is turned on or off. One or the other, it's on or off. So like when the condition of avidya is turned on, you know, a good example of that is photosynthesis. Because in photosynthesis you have, what's the equation of photosynthesis? I can't remember now. But you need light for photosynthesis to take place, right? But light is not part of the reaction. It's what gives, it becomes a catalyst for the reaction. For as long as light exists, the reaction takes place and then you get the food that the plant produces at the end of that process. So likewise, you know, you either have light or you don't have light. For as long as the condition of light being there is present, photosynthesis can take place. So you need the carbon dioxide, right? And I think it's sugar. I can't remember now. This is old stuff. Water, yes. Water and what else? What, carbon dioxide, water and? And sunlight. And sorry? And oxygen. Yes, right. Thank you. So carbon dioxide, oxygen and carbon dioxide. It gives us all, but it also needs oxygen for the production of, I think. No? Does it not need oxygen to produce it? Yes, but does it not need oxygen? Okay, right. So carbon dioxide and water, provided there is sunlight, you get oxygen on the other side. And glucose on the other side. Okay? So that's the photosynthesis process. Now, whether there is light or not is a condition. When the condition is true, so is there light? Yes. Then the photosynthesis process takes place. Is there light? No. Then no matter how much oxygen you have, carbon dioxide you have there, no matter how much water you have there, you're not going to get out oxygen and the products that you need out of that process. So this is a condition. Likewise, there's a condition of avidya, the condition of ignorance. For as long as the condition of ignorance is there, when the rupa, the I, and the consciousness meet, on the condition, provided the condition of ignorance is there, you get sampassa. Not any old passa. Passa is one, sampassa is the other. So passa is contact. Passa, it's passa is mahapranapayana. So this was, you know, our English speakers will be like, what's mahapranapayana? So this is how you write passa in Sinhala. Okay, there's the alpa pranapayana and the mahapranapayana. So I'm talking about the mahapranapayana, passa, not passa, passa. So there's passa, which is contact. These three coming together. But these three have to come together on the foundation, provided there's a condition of ignorance. That's why it's sangpassa, ignorance and attachment. So when ignorance and attachment is there, you get sampassa. And when ignorance and attachment are there, and these three things come together, now you have sampassa ja vedana. Ja is nothing but giving birth to. Have you heard the name pankaja? Some people have the name pankaja. Panka is mud. Ja is what? Upan. To be born. So that which is born in the mud is pankaja. So likewise, ja is, again, it's to do with nirukti, etymology. Ja is to give rise to. So sampassa ja vedana. Vedana that comes through the process of sampassa, which is nothing other than rupa, the I, and chakku vijnana. The three coming together, provided the condition of avidya exists, is chakku sampasaja vedana. Now, so let's count them on our fingers. There's the rupa, there's the eye consciousness, chakku sampasa, and chakku sampasaja vedana. So these are the five things. And vedana paccaya tanha. Bringing a little bit of paricchasamuppada into this process as well. Vedana paccaya tanha. Okay? Now, we sentient beings, we look for pleasure through this process. So the Buddha asks, isn't it pleasure that you seek by attaching yourself to these five things? Yes, is the answer that comes from this Brahmin. For you to be able to find pleasure by associating yourself and attaching yourself to these five things, these five things have to produce pleasure at the end of this process. Because if it doesn't, then what you are doing is a futile process. What you are doing is very futile. It's meaningless, essenceless. So he says, take a moment to check if what you are doing is ultimately going to lead you to pleasure. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. If it leads you to pleasure, then great, continue doing it. If it's not going to lead you to pleasure, then there's a problem, and which has to be fixed. So once again, rupa, which is all the rupas that we see through our eyes, the eye, chakku vijnana, which is the eye consciousness, okay, chakku sampasse, and the vedana that comes, or the feeling that comes through that process, chakku sampasaja vedana. And when this vedana arises, now you have tanha, tanha upachya upadana, upadana pachya bhava, bhava pachya jati, jati pachya. We'll come back to that later on. So this is what the Buddha asks. The eye is one example. Then he asks, what about the ear? Do you not seek pleasure through your ears? The Brahmi says, yes, Venerable Sir, we do seek pleasure through our ears. And how is it that you seek pleasure through your ears? Well, there has to be sound, which is comes from the outside world. We need the ear and the ear consciousness, the sota vijnana. Then there has to be the sampassa. The Brahmin doesn't know anything about sampassa. Okay? So the Buddha says, isn't this the case? He explains and asks, isn't this the case? So sota sampassa, and then sota sampassaja vedana. And that vedana, paccaya what? Tanha, tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati, jati paccaya, the rest of it. We'll come back to that later. Then he takes another example. Do you not seek pleasure through your noses? He says, yes. And how is it that you seek pleasure through your nose? Well, there are smells that we can sense through our noses. So the smells have to exist in the outside world. And we take in those smells through our noses. So there's the gandha, there's the nose, then there is the gandha vijnana, gandha sampassa, which is the contact of all these three, provided there's a condition of what? Avidya and tanha, and then gandha sampassaja vedana, which is the sensation that comes out of that. So that can either be sukha vedana, dukkha vedana, or adukkama sukha vedana. Let's just talk about the sukha vedana for now, because that is what keeps us going round in sansara, right? This is what we find pleasurable. So again, vedana paccaya tanha, tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati, and we'll come back later on to the rest of it. So likewise, all five senses if you take, and also the sixth sense, which is the dhamma, mana. Mana being the mind faculty. There's the mind, there are the dhammas. So what are the dhammas? What are dhammas? Beg your pardon? The thoughts. So these are the thought objects. The aramunu. Okay? These are the thought objects that come into your mind, which then the mind clings on to. And then uses that to run the process. So again, you need the dhamma, you need the mind, you need the mano vijnana, mano sampassa, and mano sampasaja vedana. Vedana paccaya tanha, tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati. Now, again, the Buddha says, isn't this how you seek pleasure? Through your five senses and the mind. And the Brahmin says, yes, Venerable Sir, that is how we seek pleasure. If it is pleasure that you seek, and if this is the process that you use to seek pleasure, Should you not take a moment to check if this process is ultimately going to lead you to pleasure or not? That's a very simple question, is it not? Absolutely. Because what if this process leads you to pain and suffering? Then this is not a worthwhile process. He doesn't say there's anything wrong with seeking pleasure. Seek pleasure, that's okay. Just check that the process you're using is going to help you get there. Now, this is what Indriya Bhavana is in the Buddha's dispensation. Contemplation of this reality. This is why I'll prefer to use the word contemplation rather than meditation. Because we need to contemplate on this truth. Now you and I, this is what we can do. What you need to do is ask yourself, how do I seek pleasure in this world? I seek pleasure in 6 different ways. Through my eyes, through my ears, through my nose, through my tongue, through my body, and through my mind. What is the process that I use to find this pleasure, to seek pleasure? If you take the eye, there's the eye, then there's the sight, there are the sights. These two are coming together and I need the consciousness that helps me to make sense of all this that's going on. So there's the eye consciousness. Provided these three things come together and the condition of ignorance exists, there is chakku sampassa. Through chakku sampassa arises chakku sampassa ja vedana, and then that vedana leads to upadana, upadana leads to bhava, bhava leads to jati. Now, what happens after that? Where does jati lead to? Jara, marana, shoka, parideva, dukkha, domanasa, upayasa, sambhavanti, evametasa, kevalasa, dukkha, khandasa, samudayo hoti. The Brahman doesn't know any of this. Why? Who revealed the paricchasamuppada to the world, process to the world? The Buddha. So only a Buddha or someone who has understood and learned the Dhamma from the Buddha can ever speak of the paricchasamuppada process. You are never going to find the Bible, or you are never going to find a copy of the Bible in which the paricchasamuppada process is written down. That is never going to happen. Unless someone goes and distorts the Bible and puts the paricchasamuppada process into the Bible. The original Bible will never have the dependent origination process within it. The Holy Quran will never have the dependent origination process within it. It's just not going to happen. It cannot happen. It's not possible. You will only find the dependent origination process in the Tripitaka, which contains the Buddha's teaching. Otherwise, you don't need a Buddha to attain Nibbana. One who has seen the dependent origination process is a sotapanna. Now, to see the dependent origination process is not a case of memorizing the words. It's a case of getting the feeling behind it. It's a case of getting the meaning behind it, understanding the mechanism behind it, not the words. You could call it A causes B, B causes C, C causes D, D causes E, and so on. That's okay. You don't have to call it avidya paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vijnana. You don't have to call it that. Doesn't matter what words you use, it's the meaning that you need behind it. So, let's coming back again to the conversation the Buddha is now having with the Brahmin. Brahmin, how is it you seek pleasure? I use my 6 senses to seek pleasure. And this is the process, the Buddha asks, isn't this the process that you use to seek pleasure? Now, there's a fundamental flaw with this process. Yes, sir? What's the role of? The role of avidya is that it gives us the perception or the view that this process is going to lead me to pleasure. That is why we have embarked on this path. Because if we knew that this process does not lead us to pleasure, we would never have embarked on that journey. If the captain knew what was going to happen to Titanic, he would never have embarked on that journey. What did he think? This is indestructible, unpenetrable. I can overcome any storm. No iceberg can ever destroy the Titanic. So what did he do? Himself and many thousands of people boarded that ship and off they went. Avidya paccaya sankhara. Yes, sir. Beg your pardon? Okay, I'll come back to that later, okay? Let me finish what I'm trying to say here. So it's ignorance or avidya that gives us this feeling, that gives us this misguided view, this distorted view. Remember last week we spoke about ditti vipalyasa, sanya vipalyasa and chitta vipalyasa. Behind all these three there is avidya. Behind ditti vipalyasa there is avidya. Now this Brahmin is in ditti vipalyasa. That's why he's not a sotapanna yet. See, once you become a sotapanna, you understand that I still have avidya, but avidya, any sankhara I do because of avidya is never going to lead me to pleasure. It's only going to lead me to unhappiness and suffering and pain. So that's why from that point forward, you try to move towards a state of mind where you want to, where there is no more avidya. Having understood that avidya is the problem, you start treating avidya while you still got it with you. It's like, remember I gave you the example of the trunk of a tree. If you're on top of the tree and you want to get down to the ground, and you couldn't jump because that's going to break a leg, but you have a saw with you, what you do is you stand on one half of the trunk and you start cutting the other half, and in the shape of an L. Okay? Once you've done that, you move across to the half on which you've cut the shape of an L, you've carved the shape of an L, and then you cut the other half. Then you cut another half, and then move across to that side. And then you keep switching sides, left and right, left and right. Every time you switch, you keep cutting a little bit off. Then every time you keep doing that, you move one step further down towards the ground. So while you're in avidya, you have to treat avidya. But for that, you need to understand that avidya is the problem. So one who has understood that avidya is the problem is a sotapanna. That's all you need. You don't need any other understanding. If you understand, if you have completely solid understanding that avidya is the problem, ignorance is the problem. Ignorance and attachment coming together, working together, they create suffering and nothing else. If that understanding is cemented in your minds, and no one can shake your confidence and conviction in that understanding, you are a sotapanna. Because then from that point forward, you're not going to put your finger to the outside and say, the problem's with you. Why? The problem's with whom? Ignorance and attachment. Ignorance and attachment does not live with the outside person, it lives in my mind. So the problem has to be with me. So let's again come back to the contemplation on that the Buddha is now speaking of to the Brahmin. So he says, Brahmin, you seek pleasure through your eyes, and to seek pleasure through your eyes, you're using the object, you're using your eye, you're using your eye consciousness, and when the three come together in the on the basis of avidya, on the base of avidya, it creates chakku sampassa, and then that generates chakku sampassa ja vedana. And then to that vedana you attach yourself, and then from there you're led to jati paccaya jara marana. So he asked the question, if you're attached to the eye, if you're attached to the object, if you're attached to the vijnana, whatever arises passes away. If you are attached to the things that arise in this world, anything. Taking the example of the eye, he says, if you are attached to this eye, do you have an eye that does not pass away? He asks the question. Now the Buddha, this is the concept of anicca that the Buddha is preaching to the Brahmin. He says, this eye, Brahmin, is anicca. Why? Because it's conditioned. There are conditions that have brought this I into this world. I'm not speaking of the I coming into the mother's womb and, you know, coming onto your body and coming alive and not all of that stuff. That is also what is samuppada. But what I'm speaking of is, at this point in time, the reason that you have an I that is functional is because there are conditions that keep it in that state. If you attach yourself to the I in your pursuit of pleasure, the I has to bring you pleasure. Otherwise you are attaching to the wrong object. So he asks, does the I bring you pleasure? He asks this Brahmin. Because what is the I? It's a conditioned object. What is the outside rupa? They're also conditioned. Being conditioned is not the problem, ladies and gentlemen. Remember that. Being conditioned is not the problem. The problem is attaching to conditioned things. The problem is attaching to conditioned things. It's like the fire. The fire doesn't burn you until you do what? Touch it. So touching it is the problem. Attaching yourself to it is the problem. Going and jumping into it is the problem. So the eye is conditioned, no problem. The problem is you attach yourself to the eye seeking pleasure. Now in your search for pleasure, you have defined what it is that brings you pleasure and what it is that doesn't bring you pleasure. So let me take rupa for an example, and I'll come back to the eye again. Let's take rupa as an example, right? At home in your kitchen, do you like to see cockroaches in your kitchen? Nobody likes to see cockroaches in their kitchens. So because you have a dislike towards seeing cockroaches and you like a clean kitchen, because a cockroach equals dirty kitchen. Because you like a clean kitchen and you're attached to that sensation, that concept, that feeling of I have a clean kitchen, when you see a cockroach crawling into your kitchen, is that a rupa that you like or you don't like? You don't like that rupa. Now, if it's someone else's kitchen and they don't cook for you, it's, you know, you don't eat there, it's just someone's home, you have no problem with that. But when it's your kitchen, it has to be clean. Well, your neighbor's kitchen has to be clean if you eat at their place. If you go around there, over there for lunch or dinner, then it has to be clean. Then you're conscious, you're concerned about that. But if it's not clean and if it's not your neighbor, if you don't eat there, I don't have a problem with that. They can do what they like with their own kitchen. My kitchen has to be clean. That's because I have an attachment to my kitchen and I have an attachment to the concept that my kitchen has to be clean. Through which you also have an attachment to, I don't like cockroaches in my kitchen. When you say I don't like something, what are you saying? I like the other. I don't like this. Why? Because you like the opposite of that. Do you get that? Why do we not like someone shouting at us? Because we like them not shouting at us. It's the two sides of the same coin. Okay? So when you're attached to that, I am attached to a clean floor, I'm attached to a clean kitchen, I'm attached to a clean pantry where there are no cockroaches, as soon as a rupa comes into your world, which is against your liking, now that's going to bring you dukkha. But what if you didn't have that attachment? For as long as you have the attachment, you have an expectation. For as long as you have the expectation, as long as there are no cockroaches on your pantry, you're okay. But what is the nature of the world? Does the world only bring you rupa that you like? No. The rupa throws all types of stuff, all types of things at you. It throws good rupas, and there are no good rupas and bad rupas. Isn't the cockroach a good rupa to the cockroach's father? The baby cockroach is a good rupa to the cockroach mother. So there are no good rupas and bad rupas. But as soon as you draw that line, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, now there is good and bad in this world. Now there is black and white in this world. Without drawing that line, there is no good and bad in this world. As in, I like and I don't like. There's no such thing. So when you don't like that rupa, when that rupa comes into your world, that's going to bring you suffering. Well, one could say, but then most of the time there are no cockroaches in my kitchen, so that's okay then, isn't it? Partly yes. Partly no, because what about the dukkha dukkha? The what if? What if a cockroach comes into my kitchen? This is very subtle. I hope you're getting what I'm trying to say. It's very subtle, and I'm trying to use a language which I really don't like to use to preach in, to try and get the point across to you. As soon as you have defined my kitchen has to be clean and I'm attached to that, even if there is no cockroach in your kitchen, in the back of your mind you're always wishing, oh, let there never be a time where I have to see a cockroach in my kitchen. Let there never be a time, may there never be a time where I have to see a cockroach in my kitchen. But what if you didn't have that expectation in the first place? Then you don't care. Whatever the world throws at you, I don't care. It doesn't matter. But as soon as you go, I don't like cockroaches in my kitchen, you'll be happy for as long as there are no cockroaches in your kitchen. But is that real happiness? No, why? What about the what if? That vexation is always there in your mind, is it not? Remember I told you the story of what happened 31st January? This gentleman who came to drive us to a sermon. And I remember this like it was yesterday, because it was the 31st of January. And I remember it was really busy on the streets that night. That's why it lives within me, it's a fresh memory. You know, this gentleman who drove to the monastery in his brand new car, and he got us into the car, and he's now driving us out of the monastery. For those of you who visited us at the monastery, will know that the road is not at its best yet. It's not been leveled yet, and it's quite rocky. Okay, so you have to be very careful. Especially if it's a new car. These new cars they're quite low, aren't they? So because they have a low chassis, you have to be careful so that these rocks don't damage the bottom of your car. So this guy, he drives a brand new car, and we get into the car, and now of course the load is heavier than it was before he came in. So as soon as he drove outside the monastery, we heard a rock scratching the surface of the car. Now, this, you know, the driver became intensely tensed from that point forward. And then he became very nervous after that. In his mind, you know, this is a brand new car, I have to protect this thing, it's my baby. Right? So now he's looking either side, making sure that there are no other rocks, and he's saying, Swaminas, please could you check if there are any trees or any branches that might scratch the doors of my car? Now I've become his servant. So he drove past the unleveled roads, and we drove all the way until we got to the main road. So now I'm thinking, thankfully we are out of the outskirts. Now at least we can go in peace. But no, it was the 31st night. So although it was quite late at night, it was very busy. So there were cars and buses and people jumping the roads without warning. Of course, you have animals on the roads as well, right? So, it's a very busy road. Now this man, he's very tensed. He's very nervous. Nothing's happened to the car as yet. Nothing's happened. Apart from that scratch that happened, just as we left the monastery, nothing's happened as yet. He's on the main road, leveled tarmac road, and he's driving on the road, but the suffering that he's going through right now, the what if suffering? What if something happens? What if someone jumps in front? What if the guy in front of me breaks without warning? Isn't that suffering always going to be there? No matter whether something happens or not, whether the car is damaged or not, at the end of that journey, throughout the journey, this guy is going to be suffering, is he not? That's the dukkha dukkha. That is the dukkha dukkha. This is why last week when I spoke to you about that graph, plotting a chart of dukkha with time on one axis and vexation on the other axis, so vexation on the y axis and time on the x axis, I said there's a constant dukkha all the time. This is the dukkha dukkha that is constant. It never drops below that point until all of ignorance has been uprooted. Because for as long as ignorance is there, what else is there? Attachment is there. For as long as attachment is there, you want to protect and preserve the things that you're attached to. When you want to protect and preserve the things that you're attached to, whether things that you like come to you or not, whether there are natural calamities that come and steal the things that you like or not, whether there are natural disasters from which you have to protect the things you're attached to or not, it's always there with you. It's always there. It's a constant. That's the dukkha dukkha. Now, above the surface of dukkha dukkha, from time to time, there are other things that we find ourselves attached to. When we attach ourselves to, let's say that the rupa, going back to the conversation between the Buddha and the Brahmin, if it's pleasure that we seek by looking at rupa, right? Let's say it's a flower. You're looking for pleasure by looking at this flower. As soon as you see this flower, now you have to do abhisankara to take in this rupa. Why? Because I like to look at flowers. What if you had no attachment to flowers? Now it's okay whether you saw them or not. Whether you see them or not, either is okay. But if you're attached to flowers and the sight of flowers, now you have to go looking for it. And as soon as there's a rupa in the outside world, you have to create the other, you have to get in line the other conditions that help you to see the flower. What are the other conditions? The eye, the chakku vijnana, and the chakku sampassa. Isn't that why you turn your head? Because the rupa is on one side. Now you turn your head towards that, or you turn your head which holds your eyes in the eye sockets. You turn your head so that your eyes can now line up with the rupa. So that the rupa is now there, your eyes are now looking at the rupa, and the chakku vijnana can now arise. See? It's not because you like you can see the rupa. You have to create the conditions. You have to put in line the conditions that give you the result. Otherwise you wouldn't have to turn your head. If you can enjoy rupas just because you like to, you shouldn't have to turn your head to look at it. When you're turning your head, what is it that you're doing? You're creating the conditions. Why? Because chakku sampasaja vedana is conditioned. To receive that vedana, the sukha vedana that comes from looking at something that you like, because it's conditioned, you have to create the conditions. You have to put together, you have to bring together those conditions. What are those conditions? Rupa, asa, the eye, chakku vijnana, chakku sampasa, and then through all that comes chakku sampasaja vedana. Now that is abhisankara. All that is abhisankara. But the problem with all abhisankara is what you are producing, what you are doing is bringing together a series of conditions. But the nature of all things in this world is that they are subject to constant flux. That's just the nature of the world. There's nothing we can do about that. So as soon as you bring these conditions together, the nature of the world, the nature of this system is that these conditions are constantly in flux. So they change again. And when they change again, you have to go back and line them up again. And then they change again. And then you have to go back and line them up again. So, for example, you are looking at a flower, you've turned your head. Your eye is subject to constant flux. It dies and it's born. Every so many times, in every second, many millions of times. So like I said, impermanence is part of the picture. Your eye is impermanent. Every moment it dies and it's born again. Dies and it's born again. Why so? Isn't the eye conditioned? What makes the eye? The cells that produce the eye. What about those cells? Aren't those cells conditioned? There are conditions that keep those cells alive. The cells need oxygen. It needs sugars that keeps it alive. Right? So all that is conditioned. So everything in this world is conditioned. When the conditions change, then the effect changes. The product changes. So when you're looking at that object, you have to constantly do abhisankara to keep this eye alive. This is why we eat. This is why we treat ourselves when our eyes start, you know, when you get a cataract or something like that. This is why you treat yourself. Why? Because you want to continue to keep these faculties in their perfect working order so that you can continue to do the abhisankara. Now, let's say there's an animal that you like to see. Okay, you know, you go to the zoo. And you see an animal that you like. Let's say a peacock. Okay, you go to the zoo, you're looking at peacocks. And these peacocks, they don't stay in one place, they keep moving back and forth. Now what do you have to do? You have to keep turning your head. Or you have to at least keep turning your eyes. Where they go, you have to move. Now what's happening? The outside rupa is constantly changing. So when the outside rupa is constantly... Why were these animals caged in the first place? See how much Dhamma you can learn from this? Why did we cage animals? Why did we cage those peacocks in the first place? Wasn't that abhisankara? The animals roamed in the wild. People like to see peacocks. When they roam in the wild, you have to take yourself to the wild. You have to get on a truck and go look for a safari or something like that, and you have to now go looking for these animals, which is a lot of effort. No one likes to do abhisankara. So what's easier to do is bring the animal to where we live and then cage the animal. Now it's easier to look at them. Why? Because the rupa is in one place now. When the animal's in the wild, now the rupa is moving all over the place. You don't know if you'll be able to spot a peacock or not. If you go bird hunting, or at least bird watching, yes. If you go bird watching, how much effort have you got to make to spot the birds that you like? You know, you got to take your binoculars, right? And you have to keep looking for them. You have to be very silent so you don't disrupt them. That's a lot of effort to make, which is a lot of pain. No one likes to make that extra effort. So what you do is you bring the birds and you cage them. Now the rupa is there exactly where you want it. Now all you have to do is line up the eye and the eye consciousness. So wasn't that abhisankara? Was that punya abhisankara or papa abhisankara? Apunya abhisankara. Well, you know the answer. You've taken away that animal's freedom. You've caged the animal for whose benefit? Mama adanna. For self-procreation. In self-interest, we've caged the animal. Yes, people will say, well, hang on, you know, they were in the wild, now we can feed them, you know, they don't have to be hungry anymore. Well, what if it was an animal that you really didn't like to look at? Would you still have done it? Would you still have done it? No. You only cage the animals that you like, you enjoy looking at. Sometimes animals you like feeding, these are the only animals that are caged. If you can't make money out of it, then you're not going to be caging the animal. So where's the compassion then? These are all excuses. Behind all these stories, behind all the abhisankaras, there's a self. Sabbe sankara. So abbe sankara. Anichyati. So, you have to have the eye, you have to have the sight, the rupa, you have to have the eye, and you have to have the chakku vijnana, and the three of them have to come together to give you any kind of rupa. But are we happy with any old rupa? No. We have particular types of rupa that we like, and particular types of rupa that we don't like. Because of what? Attachment. And attachment is there because of what? Avidya. Ignorance. Even for an arahatun vahanse to be able to see, he still needs the eye, he still needs chakku vijnana, and he still needs the rupa. But to him, there are no particular types of rupas that he likes to see and he doesn't like to see. Therefore, anything goes. So you won't see an arahatun vahanse going into the zoo to watch animals. You won't see an arahatun vahanse go bird watching. That's not going to happen. Why? Because, well, if he's in his kutia and he opens his eyes, isn't that rupa that he's seeing right now? Isn't that rupa? Why does he need to go looking for any other kind of rupa? This is also rupa. All types of rupa are rupa. But the problem is when we say, this is rupa that we like, this is rupa we don't like, the ones we like we go looking for. All of that is abhisankara. But to achieve that pleasure, we have to put in line all the conditions because all of this is conditioned. Right? Now, the Buddha asks, you go looking for pleasure. But all these factors that need to line up to give you this condition, which is to give you this product, which is you're enjoying the pleasure that you receive through the eye, aren't all the factors that have lined up to give you this product, aren't they all subject to anicca? Aren't they all conditioned? And because they're all conditioned, you always have to constantly keep them in that order, in the right order, in the right fashion. And if you're attached to it, don't you have that constant dukkha? Take your eye for an example. If you've gone to the deserts, say you've gone to if you've been to Dubai or some other, you know, some countries like that in the Middle East, and you go on a desert safari, if there's a sandstorm, what parts of your body do you start covering up first? Eyes. If there's a bright light or a bright sound somewhere, right, you first cover your eyes and then your ears. What about the rest of your body? Your immediate reaction is to cover up your eyes and to cover up your ears. Because these faculties are key in producing who? Self. Self can only exist for as long as rupas come into your world. Rupa and Sabdarupa. The beauty with the eye and the ears is that you don't have to go close up to the object to receive them. Whereas the other things, smell, you have to go close up to smell things. What about the tongue? You have to go really close up. What about the body? You have to go really extremely close up. But the eye, you can see stuff from very far away. And the ear, you can hear things from far away. Yes, sir? The liking is the self, yes. The liking is the self. The ignorance is that liking is going to bring me pleasure. Ignorance is, let me produce this self so that I can achieve pleasure. Let's go to pleasure land. That's what ignorance tells us. But for there to be pleasure land, you have to produce the pleasure land first. You have to create pleasure land. So we create pleasure land, and that is the self, that is the liking. It's that condition that we created when we talked about sets. So again, that conversation that the Buddha is having with the Brahmin, isn't the eye anicca? Why do we cover up our eyes when there's a sandstorm? If the eye will remain intact, without harm, without damage, to our liking, would we have to cover up our eyes? If that happens to my liking, would we have to cover it up? If you hear a loud noise, would you have to cover up your ears? If your ears were going to remain intact, if your eardrums were in perfect working order, because we like them to be like that, would you ever have to go to an ENT surgeon? Would you ever have to have gone to an optometrist? An optician? No. Why do we have to keep doing that? Because they are not to my liking. Well, then what is it to? Conditions. And because it is to conditions, because it's the conditions that create this product, we have to constantly keep doing what? Making sure that these conditions come in together. That is all abhisankara dukkha, not abhisankara sukha. What are we seeking through this process? Pleasure. But what do we have to do to receive that pleasure? No pain, no gain. And then the constant fear of what might happen to my eyes, what might happen to my ears, the constant, you know, that constant feeling of What might happen to me? You know, that's why when you hear a loud noise, you as soon as possible you cover up your ears. Why? Because you're worried what something might happen to my ears and I might go deaf. So there's always a constant fear. It's like if you're at home, and if you have a home, aren't you constantly fearful of burglars? Isn't that a constant thing? What, do you only fear them at night and not at day? That's a constant thing, right? But you will only have to worry about burglars for as long as, or until, you have a house. When you don't have a house, then there are no burglars you have to be worried about. Do you see the relation between that and why is it that we are in constant suffering? It's when we are attached to something that we have to constantly keep preserving it and protecting it. What if there is nothing we are attached to? Then there is nothing to preserve, there is nothing to protect. Because anything goes. I don't care what happens. But when you are the housekeeper, when you are the owner of the house, now you have to be constantly mindful, constantly watchful, and constantly vigilant. That's why you brought that dog and you put a board on the gate, beware the dog. I've seen some that say, beware the master, not the dog. Why? Because you're constantly in fear. What might happen? The what if? That's all dukkha dukkha. So for as long as tanha is there, for as long as attachment is there, dukkha dukkha will never go away. You'll have to live with it. You'll have to live with it. It's like if you give birth to a child who has... I'm just only using an example. This is not a personal... I'm not making a personal remark on it because I don't know your personal stories. This is just an example. Let's say there's a child who has Down syndrome or who is not able to cater to their daily needs. Okay, they can't look after themselves. This is a defect that they've brought from birth. Now, as a parent, don't you know that throughout my life I'm going to have to look after this child? Till the day I die, I'm going to have to look after him, feed him, wash him, take him. You know, if he can go to school, then do that. But every day of my life, I'm going to have to look after this child. Dukkha dukkha is just like that. What if you didn't bring that child into this world? No dukkha. But now that you brought the child into the world, now it's your problem. You have to constantly keep looking after it. Likewise, all things that we are attached to, we have to constantly keep feeding, we have to constantly keep nurturing. Because the nature of the world is, these things are always subject to change, constant flux. Because they're all conditioned. Yes, madam. Avidya is also a condition. What is the condition? What are the factors that give rise to avidya? That's a good question. No, avidya is not a continuous thing. Because when you become an arahant, no more avidya. So what are the conditions for avidya? Asat purusha sevane. Association with ignoble and immoral people and dhamma. When I speak of people, I'm actually referring to the dhammas. The dhamma. Because if there's an ignoble person and he keeps his mouth shut, no problem. Right? But because when he opens his mouth, what is he doing? He's giving dhamma. That is saddhamma and asaddhamma. They come in two ways, right? Good and bad. So avidya will continue to nurture for as long as you are subject to asat purusha sevani. This is why when Venerable Ananda says, Swami Bhagita Mahansa, I think half of your shasane prevails because of sat purusha sevani. Tathagata Mahansa says what? No Ananda, you got it wrong. The entirety of my ministry prevails because of sat purusha sevani, which is association with noble ones. This is why, you know, the asat purusha can be a person outside, it can also be you, yourself. Why? Because we're speaking of the dhamma, not the physical person. I want to really get that point across to you. It's not a person. It's a dhamma. Can an Asat Purusha influence an Arahatun Mahanse? No. Why? Because for an Arahatun Mahanse, he has become enlightened. He sees things for what they are. His view cannot be changed. Once you've seen the truth, you can't be fooled again. It's like if you know that whoever you've, you know, let's take another example. Say you're in a relationship with somebody and someone says, hey, this guy's, you know, she's got another thing going or he's got another thing going. At first you take it by faith and you say, although you say that, you know, she's very good to me and I don't think that's true. Come on, let's go. I'll show you. You go and see it for yourself. Once you've seen it for yourself and you've tested it, you've verified it and now it's true to you, you cannot, that cannot be changed again. Because you've seen it yourself. After that, that cannot be changed. You've seen it for yourself. You've seen the truth. So an Arahatun Mahanse is like that. No more Chitta Vipalyasa, no more Ditti Vipalyasa, no more Sanya Vipalyasa. What he's done is eradicated avidya. Through what? Associating the noble dhammas. Associate with ignoble dhammas, ignorance will continue to defile your minds. Associate noble dhammas, ignorance will continue to be eradicated, will be removed. At least little by little might be, but it will continue to be removed. Gosh, we've been speaking for quite a while now. I haven't got a problem, but I know you have other things you need to get to. And there's another sermon later on today that Venerable Dharanadasa is going to deliver. It's an English sermon, so you're welcome to either join online, I don't know if there are facilities to come and join us there. But before I conclude, let me just finish that story I was relating to you between the Buddha and the Brahmin. And perhaps next week I'll go into a little bit more detail about Indriya Bhavana and maybe we'll spend some time doing the Indriya Bhavana during the sermon. Perhaps that'll be helpful. Okay? So again, when I say bhavana, think contemplation. Contemplation. This is what we're doing. It's reflecting. Reflecting on the Dhamma. Okay? So, he says, if it's pleasure that you seek, you have to seek pleasure from things that are going to bring you pleasure. If you seek pleasure from things that are going to bring you pain and suffering, that is a useless and meaningless and futile thing to do. So, he says, Brahmin, do you not seek pleasure from the rupas? Yes, Venerable Sir, I do. Are the rupas nitya or anitya? Are they to your liking or are they conditioned, is what he's asking, basically. They are conditioned. Well, if they are conditioned, and then you go and attach to them, in your pursuit of pleasure, what's going to happen to you? Well, as soon as the conditions change, the product is going to change. Then what happens? It's going to lead me to suffering. Okay, what if the conditions don't change? Well, the dukkha dukkha, the what if, that's always there. So there is no winning in this game. And that's a really key point I want you to understand. Suffering is not only when something that you like is destroyed. That is viparinama dukkha. Abhisankara dukkha is the process of bringing together the conditions that give you that product, that which you like. But dukkha dukkha is constant. That constant dukkha is there from the moment you attach yourself. What might happen? What if? The moment you befriended that girl or boy and you started calling him boyfriend or girlfriend, from that point forward, dukkha dukkha. Why? What if? What if she dies? What if she leaves me? What if she friends somebody else? What if she cheats on me? Before you became friends with her, there was no dukkha dukkha. But the moment you decided, yes, she's going to be my girlfriend, then what happened? Dukkha dukkha. They come as a package. So that dukkha dukkha is what really we need to understand, because that's constant. Abhisankara, it's only when you do abhisankara. Viparinama, it's only when the abhisankaras, when what you have produced as a result of abhisankara start passing away. That's viparinama. But the dukkha dukkha, constant. That's constant. So again the Buddha asks the rupas, nitya or anicca? Anicca. Is it to your liking or because of conditions? Condition. They are all conditioned. And in seek of pleasure, and pleasure can only be found because you like certain things, right? Otherwise, where's pleasure in rupas? What are beautiful rupas? Are there beautiful rupas? Lassana rupa kila deyatti na me loke? No. There are no beautiful rupas. Because what's pretty to me is not pretty to you. What's beautiful to you is not beautiful to me. So that is based on ignorance and attachment. So as soon as you have decided this is going to be bringing me pleasure, that is based on ignorance. As soon as you do that, you are going to do abhisankara to receive that. All of that is dukkha. So that rupa, as soon as you have attached yourself to the rupa, in the pursuit or in seeking pleasure, it's going to bring you suffering. Pointless. What about the eye? Is the eye to your liking or is it there because it's conditioned? Conditioned. And then if you attach yourself to it, what happens when the conditions change? Dukkha dukkha. Viparanama dukkha even. And to keep the conditions in that word in a working fashion, abhisankara dukkha. And the what if? Dukkha dukkha. That's constant. But what if you didn't have rupas you really wanted to look at? I'm not fussed. I see or don't see, no problem. I don't care if I can see. I don't care if I don't see. Then, I don't care if the eye exists or not. Only an arahatan wahanse could be put into a dark room and be put in there for a week. Everyone else, most other people go mad. Why? I want to see. Dukkha dukkha. I want to be relieved from this dukkha dukkha. And then the chakku vinyana. What about that? Well, vinyana rises and passes away. Rises and passes away. So we need to build that vinyana up. That requires effort. Why do you want to be alive? Do you like to fall unconscious? No. Well, when you're unconscious, what's gone? Is the eye gone? Is the rupa gone? No. What about what's gone? Consciousness. The eye consciousness is gone. So you want the eye consciousness to come back. Why? Pelenava. Constantly in this dukkha dukkha. I want to be able to see. So we are always in this dukkha dukkha, constantly wanting this chakku vinyana to be functional, to be working. Okay? And then chakku sampassa. So constantly trying to bring these three things together, the rupa, the eye and the chakku vinyana, bringing these three things together. This is why we turn our heads to look at things. This is why we switch on the TV. This is why we climbed up Sigiriya rock fortress. All why? Because we wanted to bring these three things together. What? Rupa, the eye and chakku vinyana, eye consciousness. And as soon as these three things come together, we are working on a condition on the basis of ignorance and attachment. Chakku sampasaja vedana arises. Vedana paccaya tanha. As soon as that vedana arises, we attach ourselves to the vedana. Because it's a good sensation, that good feeling that we like. Vedana paccaya upadana. Now we are into close association. We really want it. We dedicate ourselves to seeking pleasure through that process, through that object. Upadana paccaya bhava. Bhava is the being, the becoming. This is the being, okay? Or rather the becoming of someone that is looking at that sight. And then bhava paccaya jati, ana jati hatagata. Jati or the becoming or the being of someone who is looking, using their eyes to seek pleasure. That is the jati that has just been born. We're not talking about an animal. We're not talking about a human being or anything else here. We are talking about the jati of someone who is using their eye and the rupa and the chakku sampasse and the chakku vinyane and the chakku sampasse ja vedana to do what? Seek pleasure. That is the jati that has been born right now. But jati paccaya jara marana. Shoka parideva dukkha domanasa eva metasa kevalasa dukkha khandasa samudeva hoti. Whatever arises passes away. Why? Because all of those factors in that equation are conditioned. So Vedana comes in. So Vedana comes in three forms. Yeah. They all go to Jara Marna Shoka Parideva. But see, you have Sukha Vedana, Dukha Vedana, and Adukkama Sukha Vedana. Okay? Where it's Sukha Vedana, Vedana Pacha Tanha. Where it's Dukha Vedana, Vedana Pacha Adimokha. Where you want to detach yourself. Moksha is what? To remove yourself. Nivanatat Moksha again? To remove yourself. Okay? Adimoksha is you're really striving now to remove yourself, detach yourself from that feeling. But that is immediately Vedana anyway. Dukkha. Dukkha Vedana it's obvious that brings us Dukkha. Sukha Vedana is not what's obvious that brings us, is not obvious that Sukha Vedana brings us Dukkha. Okay? And Adukkama Sukha Vedana is the Upeksha. That's why Tathagata Nuvanse says, Sapa Dukkha Klesa Dakinna. Look at Sukha as something that is eventually going to bring you Dukkha. Dukkha Hulak Klesa Dakinna. So Hulak is a spear. Look at the Dukkha as a spear, because that is pretty obvious. You look at a spear, you know that if you go and touch it, it's going to bring you pain. Okay? And then, Upekshava Anicca Lesa Dakinna. So Upeksha is there, is the Adukkama Sukha Vedana, or where you have not yet determined whether this is going to bring you Sukha or Dukkha. Remember I gave you the example of someone knocking on your front door. You're thinking, who might it be, who might it be, who might it be? You keep walking, you're still thinking, who might it be? So you don't know whether to be happy or to be sad. You open the door, you see the person, now you know whether you're going to be happy or you're going to be sad. But until that time, you're in a state of vexation. Who is it? What might it be? What might be? Is this going to be bringing me pain or is it going to bring me suffering? But that feeling itself is Dukkha. Yes. No, that goes to Adimokha. Dukkha Vedana goes to Adimokha. Adimokha, like I said, is where you're detaching. You want to distance yourself as much as possible from that pain. See, I'll talk to you about that on another day in more detail. But the problem here, really, what we really need to understand is not the points where we experience Dukkha Vedana. Because there, really, no one attaches themselves to Dukkha Vedana. Where we attach ourselves, because Vedana is the problem here. What is the second noble truth of suffering? Tanha. That's the problem. The second noble truth is Tanha. That is what we need to be able to penetrate and understand and realize. Because it's Tanha that we need to eradicate. And what do we do Tanha towards? What do we attach ourselves to? Sukha Vedana, not the Dukkha Vedana. No one here attaches themselves to Dukkha Vedana. It's always Sukha Vedana. So Sukha Vedana, when Sukha Vedana comes along, we need to be able to penetrate that and look at the suffering that's going to be coming towards eventually. And then do something about it before it comes to us. That's when you act with wisdom. Yada panyaya pasati, not yada vedanaya pasati. Okay, so that was the discussion that the Buddha had, or the discourse that the Buddha gave to the Brahmin about the faculty contemplation, Indriya Bhavana. So ultimately, what he's asking is, you Brahmin, you're using all these five things: the eye, the rupa, the chakku vinyana, the chakku sampasa, the chakku sampasa vedana, in your seek of pleasure, but ultimately, you're seeking pleasure by seeking refuge in these five things. But are they going to bring you suffering or pain? Pleasure or suffering at the end of this? And he says, it's going to bring me suffering. So now if you contemplate on that, if you contemplate on that truth, what happens? What is to contemplate on the truth? Where you've been looking at things as Iccha Sukha Atta, if you begin to look at them as what? Anicca Dukkha Anatta. Remember, this is why I said last week, you have all been meditating all your lives. Throughout sansara, we have all been meditating. It's nothing new to us. But the meditation that we've been doing is the wrong kind of meditation. Every time we meditated, we contemplated, we thought of rupas as being what? Iccha sukha atta. We thought of the eye as what? Iccha sukha atta subha. We thought of the eye consciousness as what? Iccha sukha atta subha. We thought of chakku sampasa as what? Iccha sukha atta subha. What about chakku sampasaja vedana? Iccha sukha atta subha. But now, we have to change the way we contemplate on these things. But for that, we need first to remove the ditti vipalyasa and then use contemplation to eradicate sanya vipalyasa and chitta vipalyasa. By contemplating on anicca, dukkha, anatta, asubha. So, think of this week's sermon as an introduction to what we are going to be doing next week. So, I would suggest that if you are able, come along next week and we'll continue what we talked about in this week's sermon. And then we'll also find some time to perhaps do the Indriya Bhavana for a few moments. Because like we do the Arya Maitri Bhavana, there's a certain thing you can recite. I really don't like using these words like reciting, because reciting doesn't do anything for us. It's the contemplation that is required. You know, even when we do the Arya Maitri Bhavana, and I sit down here and I'm reciting this, that is of really little use to you. Because when I say, may I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fire of birth, how much time do you need to reflect on that? That's enough for you to reflect on for an entire day. For an entire week, that's enough for you to reflect on. But as soon as I've said that, I jump on to the next line. And then as soon as I've said the second line, I move on to the third line. May I and all beings be freed from the fire of decay, from the fire of death. So where is the time for you to contemplate? Do you see? This is why I say, reciting is one. It's okay, it's helpful for you to memorize this. But really, what you need to do is contemplate this in your own time. If you sit down to do Arya Maitri Bhavana, just use one line. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fire of birth. That's enough for you to do meditation for an entire week. Why? What do you need to contemplate on? How is birth going to lead me to suffering? Think about all the things that I've given birth to. I'm not just talking about giving physically birth to, but about jati. I'm talking about jati here. Birth to what? The rupas, the eye, the chakku sampasaja vedana. All these things I'm giving birth to. With every moment, every passing moment, do they lead me to happiness or do they lead me to suffering? That you need to contemplate. Reciting is one. It will be helpful, but it's the contemplation that's really going to dig deep and remove those defilements from the deep and dark corners of your mind. Okay. So I think we'll conclude the sermon there. So you had a question, Puta, shall we cover that at next week's sermon? And I think we might have done a sermon touching on some of those points. Your question was about Raga, Dvesha, Moha, right? And what was your question again? Okay, I think we covered that in one of the previous sermons, because it's not raga and dvesha you need to eradicate. If you treat moha, then raga and dvesha will be uprooted. I think we discussed that in one of the previous sermons, but we'll talk about that again at length in the next sermon, okay? So you also have now a reason to come back next week. So prior to conclusion, just to say that there's another CD that has been produced, which is disc number 2. And this also includes 10 of the more recent sermons. The first one was some of the very first sermons that we did. So this has some of the 10 of the more recent sermons. Unlike now, where we have decent technology and we can have the facilities to record them in good fashion, some of the sermons that we did in the past, it required a lot of work to get them to an audible standard. So that's why it took us a little bit of time to produce them. But it has, they have now been produced, and it's on the CD. And so it's free, by the way. There's no cost, and like it says, this is, contains 10 English sermons, and it's for free distribution only, because the cost of this has been borne by exactly, that's the point. There's no name. There's no name on this. That's the point. What's the point of a name? This is the Dhamma. If you were to put a name on this, it has to be Gautama, Supreme Buddha. Who else? I'm just the vehicle. But it's one of you who took, well, not one, but more, quite a few of you who took, made the effort to produce this in a way that could be distributed to all of you. I don't know any of you by name. Certainly not most of you. Only, you know, perhaps one or two who come and help organize these sermons and so on. But the name is nothing. What's the point of a name? It's just a conventional thing that we use to interact in day-to-day society. But this journey that we are on is to become nobodies, not to become somebodies. Right? Our journey is to become nobodies, and nobodies don't have any names. So this is a gift of Dhamma to all of you. I think we've about 50 CDs we brought today. Is that 50? 40, okay. Is that plenty enough to go around? Okay. So if there are, I think we'll bring a few more next time we come round. Or there's, you can get them at the monastery. Or also, if you contact the numbers on the discs, then you can ask for other more copies, and there's no cost to them. And that's because you know, those of you who listen to these sermons, and having decided and having thought, we need to share this gift of Dhamma with more people as much as we possibly can. You have produced these discs, and therefore they can be given for free. I don't earn any money, so I can't bear the cost of these things now. I used to, but I can't do now. So it's you who's done this, and the merits that you acquire every time someone listens to one of these sermons, every time it helps them to solve their day-to-day problems, every time it helps them to extinguish the fires of raga, dvesha, moha, the merit is cannot be quantified. It's unquantifiable. You can't say there's so much merit. It's just unquantifiable. And I hope and pray that may those merits help you all, particularly those who helped produce this, to attain Nibbana in this very birth itself. Okay. So right, with that we'll conclude today's sermon. Is it English today? Ari Maitri? Sinhala? Okay. So we'll do the Ari Maitri for a few moments and then we'll conclude. Yes. Last week, Sinhala? So is it Sinhala or English? Okay, we'll do English. Okay.
May I and all things in all worlds be freed from the fire of birth, freed from the fire of decay, freed from the fire of illness, freed from the fire of death, freed from the fire of sorrow, freed from the fire of lamentation, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fire of suffering, freed from the fire of discontentment, freed from the fire of exhaustion, freed from the fire of disappointment, freed from the fire of clinging on to the five aggregates, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the suffering of samsara, freed from the disease of samsara, freed from the fear of samsara, freed from the flames of samsara, freed from the burning of samsara, freed from the sorrow of samsara, freed from the lust of samsara, freed from the clutches of samsara, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. The karma worlds are in despair. May I and all beings be freed from the karma worlds. The rupa worlds are in despair. May I and all beings be freed from the rupa worlds. The arupa worlds are in despair. May I and all beings be freed from the arupa worlds. All worlds are in despair. May I and all beings be freed from all the worlds. Nibbana is the only salvation. May all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May all beings attain Nibbana. Letting go is the only salvation. May I and all beings let go. Detachment is the only salvation. May I and all beings be detached. Being freed is the only salvation. May I and all beings be freed. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. Nibbana is the only salvation. May I and all beings attain Nibbana. May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the bondage of lust, freed from the bondage of aversion, freed from the bondage of delusion, freed from the bondage of Mara, healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana, 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 healed with the ultimate bliss of Nibbana.
Remember the three words of advice I gave to that novice monk. If you use these three things as your guiding light, you won't go wrong, ladies and gentlemen. Make the Dhamma your teacher, nobody else. Don't center around individualities. Don't center around people. Persons are not important. The Dhamma is what's important. Because what happens if you attach yourself to a person? ದುಃಖ ದುಃಖ, ಅಭಿಸಂಕಾರ ದುಃಖ, ವಿಪರಿಣಾಮ ದುಃಖ. Isn't that true for all things? Is aren't persons conditioned? But what about the truth, what about the universal truth in this world? Is that conditioned? No. The universal truth in this world is not conditioned. It's the nature of the world. For as long as the world exists, the nature of the universal truth remains. From time to time, it disappears. From people's knowledge, that's all. But the truth is still there. And then you need a Buddha to come and uncover that. That's all Buddhas do. That's what Buddhas do. So don't center yourself around people, and including myself. Don't put me on a pedestal. Don't think that I am your savior. I am not. Don't center yourself around me. I'm a nobody because I'm conditioned as well. Make the Dhamma your master. Make the Dhamma your teacher. And associate the Dhamma as much as you possibly can. Number two, always be mindful. Because you're trying to protect yourself from enemies. These enemies are the Raga, Dvesha and the Moha. Some enemies you can spot from many miles away. Others come in disguise. And they are extremely dangerous. Because you are good people and you're becoming great people now, remember, you're going to become attractive. You're going to become attractive to other people, other sentient beings, and they're going to come looking to you sometimes for help, sometimes for advice. Be careful how you conduct yourselves with them. Don't fall into the trap. Because you can't help someone if you're in the same lurch as them. First you have to save yourself, then you can save others. And finally, never give up. Never give up. You can do this. The Bodhisattva did it. You can do it. Between the Bodhisattva and the Mara, who was defeated? Mara was defeated. Our teacher, our master, the Buddha, was not defeated. What right do you have to say that, oh, what if I'm defeated? You have no right to say that. You will be victorious. You can do it. You can do it. Because your master did it. You can do it. Remember those three things. Conduct the next week with these three things and nothing else. Put everything else to aside. Abhisankara, this, that, paticchasamuppada. Put all that to aside. Use these three things. Associate the Dhamma. Be mindful. Never give up. Fight. When Raga, Dvesha, Moha enters your mind, fight. Don't give up. Until you have put him down, put the enemy down, and beheaded the enemy. Never to rise again. Fight. If you're soldiers, if you don't have enough in numbers, then come and speak to me. I also have an army, because I'm also at war. And if you have other noble people that you associate, what about the people in your family? Because chances are you're not the only person that listens to the Dhamma at home. Perhaps your husband, your wife, your children, your brothers, your sisters, perhaps they also listen to the Dhamma. And when you listen to the Dhamma, they also start enlisting an army. What is this army? The Dhamma. Anicca Dukkha Anatta. When your army is not strong enough to fight the enemy, call upon other armies. If you can't do it at home, come and speak to us. Come and go and speak to the Swami Nuhansa in your own local temples. Swami Nuhansa, I find this attractive. Please help me. My army is not strong enough to fight this war. Guess what? They'll give you their army. Then fight together. But never give up. Fight until you have beheaded the enemy. And until they can no longer stand up on their two feet. Because then you become victorious. Did you have a question? It's Pau that we are talking of. The enemy that we need to behead is the Raga, Dvesha, Moha. That's not Pau. That's Kusal. Okay? Your mother will explain to you on the way back home. Now you have a question to ask her. Okay, right. We'll conclude the sermon there then. So before we do that, let us transfer the merits to all those who deserve these merits and to all those who have helped us make this sermon possible, make this event possible. So first and foremost, let us take a moment again to reflect on the fact that it is the Supreme Buddha whose Dhamma that we have the opportunity today to understand, to comprehend, and to help us redeem ourselves from the shackles of samsara. It is because he sacrificed himself over many births in samsara, and he spent 45 years of his life dedicated himself to teaching and propagating the Dhamma. And that Dhamma that he taught and he propagated, his disciples, the Bhikkhu, Bhikkhunis, Upasaka, Upasikas, who learned this Dhamma, learned them by heart, and then passed this Dhamma down over the generations, down to us as our heirloom today. It is thanks to them that today we have this gift of Dhamma in our hands, for us to be able to understand, comprehend and redeem ourselves from samsara. So may those bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who sacrificed themselves, who dedicated their lives to protecting and preserving this Dhamma, be able to rejoice in these merits that we have all acquired today. If any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may these merits help them to be born in the blissful plane. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds and fulfill the noble eightfold path. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also, let us transfer these merits to the Bhikkhu, Bhikkhunis, Upasaka, Upasikas, which includes people just like yourself who dedicate their time, some day and night, to practicing this Dhamma, to cultivating the Dhamma, and also to propagate that Dhamma, to teach that Dhamma, to disseminate that Dhamma throughout the world for the benefit of all universal sentient beings just like yourselves. May they all also be able to rejoice in these merits. Also take a moment to transfer merits to the Nayaka Swami Mahansa of the Siri Island Methini Arame, as well as all the other resident monks, as well as particularly to the Udwe Dhammaloka Swami Padan Mahansa, as well as to the Mahanayaka Swami Mahansa, the Anunayaka Swami Mahansa of all the chapters of all the Nikayas that exist in the Buddhist Shasane. May they all be able to rejoice in these merits. And also for a moment, please pass on the merits that we have all acquired today to the monks who are resident in your local temples and your local nunneries, any nuns who are resident in their local nunneries, because although we come along today and we deliver a sermon, we spend some time with you from time to time and once a week and so on and so forth, it is the monks in your local temples, the nuns in your local monasteries who are there for you day and night, attending to all your needs, helping you found yourselves in the Dhamma, helping your children to found themselves in the Dhamma, helping them out with the Dhammapasa and making sure that they are able to become good citizens of tomorrow. It is them who have put time aside from the time that they have to attain Nibbana to attend to all your needs and wants. So may the merits that we have all acquired today be transferred to them as well. May all those Bhikkhu, Bhikkhunis, Upasaka, Upasikas rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today, and may those merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this very birth itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas, Brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead that we invited at the start of this sermon, as well as anyone who might have been a mother, father, an uncle, aunt, a brother, sister, teachers, as well as anyone who's been a relation of yours in any way, shape or form in this infinitely long samsara, as well as anyone who might have helped you, assisted you, supported you in any way, shape or form, may all of them be able to rejoice in these merits. If any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may these merits help them to be born in the blissful plane. May these merits help them to fulfill the meritorious deeds, abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer these merits to everyone who helped make this event a success, from inviting you along to be here today, perhaps by providing you with a sermon, a CD of some sort, and perhaps encouraging you to be here today, or perhaps by offering you with transport to come and be here today, or perhaps by offering you a glass of water, or maybe by ushering you to a seat. In any way, shape or form, if anyone has helped you and assisted you to be here today, may they all be able to rejoice in these merits. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer merits to the members of the armed forces who served to protect our country, our motherland, over the many years where a war prevailed in our country, as well as the members of the police force, who dedicated and sacrificed their lives to protecting and preserving our motherland, our country, and the country in which today we can practice the Dhamma peacefully and in harmony with each other. May they all be able to rejoice in these merits, as well as anyone who might have lost their lives in the war. Be their friend or foe, if any of them are looking for merits, may they be able to rejoice in these merits. As well as that, take a moment to transfer merits to all those who might have lost their lives in the tsunamis. They might be friends and family of yours, as well as those who perhaps are not friend or family. If any of them are looking for merits, may they all be able to rejoice in these merits. If any of them have been born in the woeful plane, may these merits help them to be born in the blissful plane. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, let us take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired today to all those who protect and preserve this country today and in the future and in the past, to all those who are engaged in developing and developing their country, in the present, future and the past, and as well as those who are dedicated to ruling our country in the present, future and the past. May they all also be able to rejoice in these merits, because it is thanks to them that today we have the freedom, we have the time to be able to dedicate ourselves to the Dhamma. May they all be able to rejoice in these merits. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. And finally, may the merits that we have all acquired today empower and energize all those people around the world, just like yourselves, humans, devas, brahmas, and so on and so forth, who strive day and night to attain the noble attainments, to practice the Noble Eightfold Path, to be able to attain arahanthood. And may we be able to witness many hundreds of thousands of arahatun vahanses, just like in the era of the Gautama Samma Sambhujanan vahanse, in the time of the great elders Sariputta and Moggallan Maharatan vahanse, in this very birth itself, may be able to witness many hundreds and thousands of arahatun vahanses in this blessed land itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may the merits that we have all acquired today in preaching this sermon and listening to this sermon, as well as in any help and support we have extended towards this sermon, as well as disseminating the Dhamma, producing CDs and so on and so forth, by helping making these sermons available to listeners to listen either online or offline, leisurely and so on and so forth. May all and everyone who have helped in any way, shape or form to pass on the Buddha's gift of Dhamma to all sentient beings, be able to rejoice in these merits, and may these merits help us all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in the era of the Gautama Samma Sambhujanan Vahanse itself, in this very birth itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. හදයි පින්තුනි මහා සංඝරත්න විසින් ඔබ සියලු දෙනාට මෙත්තානි සංසයෙන් ආශිර්වාද කරන්න බලාපොරොත්තු වෙනවා සියලු දෙනා වන්දනා කරගන්න. The Maha Sangha will pass on their blessings to all of you with the Mettani Sansa. Please be prepared to accept the blessing.
Raga ginnen nidetva desha ginnen nidetva moha ginnen nidetva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita-tara-vitnva nibbana-parama-sukhayan sukhita-tara-vitnva nibbana-parama-sukhayan sukhita-tara-vitnva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva
tunruwange suvisi ananta maha guna beren silu loka silu satvayoma nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetva. May the noble triple gem be with you all. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. So just an announcement for the benefit of all. On the 23rd, which is a Sunday, I think that's not next week, but the week after, yes, there will be an ordination ceremony at the monastery, where there will be about in the order of 20 young Anagarikas who will be ordaining and becoming part of the Buddha Shasane to fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and become Arahatun Vahanses themselves. So you're all welcome to join us on the 23rd. The ceremony will commence at around 9 a.m. in the morning. And also, for your information, the English sermon on that day will be delivered from the premises of the monastery at 2:30. So, for those who might find it a little bit difficult to join us there, I ask for your forgiveness for any inconvenience that might cause, but we'll make the sermon available as soon as possible online because we don't have a decent internet connection at the monastery.